Call for the weeping mothers, the lost fathers, and the forsaken children, and let them come quickly, for a voice of crying is heard out of Zion. For we are greatly confused, for death has come into our ghettos to cut off the young men and women from the streets of Philadelphia, New York, L.A., Georgia, Ohio, Florida, Mississippi, and throughout America, South America, the Caribbean islands, Africa, Asia, and all over the world. So return unto me, thus saith Yah, and I will return unto you, O my people.
Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all that getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and listen to the live stream there. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com and listen to the live stream at that location. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your walk-around, carry-around devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. You'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car. That's Time for Awakening Radio Program. with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. You always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, just hit that like button for me. That's Time for Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook and Time for Awakening Media. Home base is there. In fact, we're getting ready to make some changes to home base. So, again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. There you'll see more interesting content, future podcast, future blogs, podcasts of the programs that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we're scheduled to have a special guest join us, attorney, organizer, and founder of the Black Lawyers for Justice. Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz is scheduled to join us in conversation this evening. And we'll be right back to get things started. I know that I got a call from one of his assistants that told me that he had gotten a call tonight and they were going to leave for Charlottesville shortly, but I know he'll be able to spend some time with us. And we'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies, everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in a co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I'm looking forward to our, guests really sharing what's going on currently.
You know, we had Attorney Shabazz on with us before when we first left Terrestrial Radio. We was in another studio at that time. We had a little technical difficulties. I'll never forget it. But I'm glad that he's back with us. Attorney and organizer and founder of Black Lawyers for Justice is with us, Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz. Assalamu alaikum, Attorney Shabazz.
Wa alaikum salam, sir.
How are you?
All right, I just want to make sure you can hear me. I'm so fine, and thank you for having me on.
Attorney Shabazz, before we kind of touch on some of the things, because I know you're headed to Charlottesville, you had some events Thursday before that, the kickoff rally for the National Black Men's Convention and the 10,000 Black Men's March at the Thurgood Marshall Center down in Washington, D.C., several folks were there, representatives for organizations was there. Talk about, and then Cornel West was also one of the featured speakers, Professor Cornel West. Talk about the rally down there and some of the things that was covered.
Yes, I appreciate you. On October the 5th, we did kick off in our rally the National Black Men's Convention here, and the 10,000 Black Men's March, which is set for next April the 18th through the 22nd, is our National Black Men Convention, and the March, which is going to be on Saturday and Sunday, April 21st and 22nd. We kicked it off, and on tomorrow, the 22nd anniversary of the Million Man March, on that 22nd anniversary tomorrow at 12 noon, we have a news conference, which is our first news conference held on this very special day, October 16th, because, my brother, we are not only just kicking off a convention and a march, but I, myself, Dr. Cornel West, other organizations like the Ministers of Defense, Pastor Ted Sutton, and other clergy that are with us, other black nationalists that are with us, other nonprofits that are with us, we have determined that we must follow up on the work of the Million Man March, and we must continue to go after raising up the black man.
Attorney Shabazz, talk about the importance, you know, because, you know, when I introduced you, I said you were an attorney and an organizer, and it's clear from your work that you are capable of organizing heads of groups and organizations. Because there's a lot of groups listed here. I'm reading off the names of some of these groups and COBRA and other groups that are listed here. The importance of being able to organize. There's a lot of voices out here, conscious voices, that's talking about unity. But they are. It's a talent to be able to organize people. It's a lot of people want to talk unity, but they're not capable of organizing. talk about the importance of not only being an organizer, but cultivating the minds of some of our young people to be able to organize?
That is a very good question. My dear brother, it takes, number one, the heart and the spirit to want to have our people together. It takes having respect for other groups and persons, even though they may not be the same as you,
okay,
or not as large or strong as you, or they might be different, but having enough respect to appreciate them. And then, in my case, it after having experience being in this movement now since I was a teenager at Howard University, so after years and years of coming up in a campus which had blacks from all over the country and from different classes and ranges, and then now being in the movement and being all over the country and the world, and me being an attorney, I've been in with the middle class. I've been with the hardest of the urban class. I work in the ghettos of America. So my experiences, my brother, allow me to relate to a wide variety of people, and my heart wants me to relate to a wide variety of people. And so therefore, I feel that I'm a good person to be able to relate to the Christians, to relate to the Muslims, to relate to the gang member, to relate to the social service worker, to relate, the black militant, the Black Panther, the Pan-Africanist. It's just something that I enjoy doing. And if I was to say how I would relate it to young people, I would say just keep, being active and helping our people. When you're active and you help our people, whether it's in work or whether it's in the movement, it will expose you to a wide range of our people, and try to respect and learn from them. And that's the way to go, I would say.
Attorney Shabazz, because you talked about the importance of respecting other people and where they are. How much, and I'll put this in a certain fashion, how much do you as an organizer think the responsibility or hold responsible some of our religious organizations to help rally the minds of our people to understand the situation that we face? And when I say the responsibility, I'm talking about be you Muslim, Christian, Hebrew, Israelite, whatever persuasion or religious belief you have. In the past, that has been a stumbling block for a lot of our people to organize. But how much responsibility is put at these religious organizations' feet to understand the position our people are in?
Well, I put it like this, my brother. Me and my daughter out here rolling. I'm doing the daddy thing.
I know it.
And I'm blessed to be able to do it.
Okay.
It works something like this, my dear brother. The scripture talks about, it says, woe to the shepherd. And it holds the clergy, all of the clergy, accountable for the condition of the people, because it is a fact that many of the people are under the clergy.
Okay.
They're listening to the clergy on Sunday.
Yes.
They're listening to them if they're in the Islam on Friday. So by the mere fact that they do have sway over the people, and they propose, and in some cases do, many cases do, in many cases propose, to have divine authority over the people and to come in the name of the Almighty, That does place a responsibility on them to guide the people effectively, even as much as a politician is exposed to represent his voting and the constituents, being held accountable in office, so too must the clergy be held for the persons in the community who have given over to them not just their vote, but their mind, their heart, their spirit, their faith. And so, we want to be constructive about the situation and say that we are hoping that in this day and time, in 2017, with President Donald Trump and his behavior, and with the rise of the white right and white nationalists and racism and the police attacks on our people, we would hope now that the clergy has, in totality, have caught up to speed with the times, because we need them. And yeah. We all want to be on one accord and talking about one God, one aim, one destiny. We need the church. We need the mosque. We need the strong men, the clean men, disciplined men in the church, the disciplined men amongst the Muslims, whatever type of Muslims they are. So I'm trying to be constructive about it, and we're hoping that the signs of the times are strong enough and drastic enough to let us all know that we must all step up our efforts. If we're in the church, we have to have a black liberation theology and a black liberation activity coming out of the church. We would hope that that's where the future would lie.
Attorney Shabazz, before I pass the mic to Brother Richard, let me, because I want you to kind of set this conversation up by talking about DeAndre Harris. And for our listening audience who are not familiar with him, what happened to him down there when he was beaten within an inch of his life, and then they turn around and charge him with assault. Before I ask you some questions dealing with Charlottesville, give our listening audience a background on young brother DeAndre Harris.
Okay, now DeAndre Harris, I actually represent Corey Long,
now, with
another man that was arrested.
Okay.
But it's okay, though. DeAndre Harris is a young man that was beaten savagely in Charlottesville. And now some of the white supremacists have filed a warrant on him, and they have the authorities there took up the warrant that was filed on Mr. Harris and had him arrested, and he is charged, last I saw, with a felony, malicious wounding. And we don't believe, from my observation from the outside, I don't believe that this is a charge that has merit to it, and I don't believe that it is a charge that should be brought. However, it is a charge that is consistent with what Donald Trump was saying, and what Donald Trump was saying, that he was going after both sides, so that he saw the thing as equal on both sides, even though a woman, a white woman, was killed. And so here, not only have Klan members been arrested, for sure Klan members and white supremacists who were blatantly seen on video beating and attacking our people have been charged, but also they have gone after the demonstrators and have gone after some black demonstrators, even those that were beaten, like DeAndre Harris, which is a shame. And also Mr. Corey Long, who I'll be with in court on Tuesday, has been arrested also and charged with assault.
Now, was Corey's beating, him being assaulted, was that caught on film? Is that the brother that had the aerosol can?
Corey is the man with the aerosol can.
Okay.
He was not beaten.
Okay,
yeah,
all right.
But there is... in his video is the one that you've already seen. I'm not saying anything new. In his video is the one where the white supremacist pulls out the gun and shoots the gun.
And fires at him right in front of the cops. He wasn't arrested.
Yeah, so that's let you know the environment. I'm not going to comment specifically on Mr. Long's case. I'm not going to do that.
I understand.
At this point, because the situation is getting so tight where I've had to tell Mr. Long and us, we're not going to comment on the facts of his case. We're going to try his case and let the facts try itself. But it can be stated, because it's already known, that the white supremacists were heavily armed on that day. The white nationalists engaged in repetitive violent acts, and the armed capacity and everything that the white supremacist was doing pretty much justify anybody, and I mean anybody, for legally and lawfully having the need to defend themselves. If you had to, in your mind, for anybody, I'm talking about nobody specific, but if anybody was there, they would easily be able to justifiably form the mindset that I should be able to protect myself with what the white right had in their possession and using violently on that day.
you know, I want to come back.
You know what I mean?
I want to come back and touch on that particular subject that you just touched on. But, Brother Richard, I wanted to get you involved in that conversation. Brother Richard.
Yes, thank you, Brother Sebastian, for being with us. And as you were speaking about the organizing, you and Elliot was talking about the organizing and what it takes to be an organizer. And I appreciate what you said in relationship to the various, I'm going to call them communities within the Black community. And I'm going to raise a question of my concern, just to get your feedback. Do you think, and I'm looking from the perspective of us formulating policy as a Black people because of the time we're in, do you think we have an infrastructure that we can use to bring these various positions to the table to formulate policy, or is that something we still have to build?
Yeah, well, I would say, for example, we're building a coalition around the 10,000 Black Men's March and the National Black Men's Convention. And as we build this coalition, we enact and are building in our policies, you know, and setting an example of what we believe should be done in these instances. For example, we bring to the table here as some of the co-conveners of our effort, Dr. Cornel West, on one hand, and from one side of the spectrum, all the way to on the other side of the spectrum, a brother named Irritated Genie, who represents the Straight Black Pride Movement. Now, as we know, there is there's a big flap in the community on the sexuality issue. You know, it's a constant subject matter. However, both of these men are committed to the liberation of our people. Dr. Cornel West is well known, and he's also known that his position is he wants equality for every kind of Black person or Black man, regardless of their sexual orientation. Brother Irritated Genie, on another hand, he's hard line saying that pedophilia, and he's right that pedophilia is a major problem in the community, and he ties homosexuality to that. Well, should we not one of these men off the table or both of these men off the table, or is there a way in the common interest of our community and our nation that both of these men could at least be in the same room and that some of their objectives would line up? And the answer is yes. So also at the table now, let's talk policy. Policy, that's a certain kind of ideology. Then let's talk policy. Policy at the table, you have Black nationalists and others, Muslims and others, that are responsible for things like the Million Man March and all of these big marches, right? But they have not necessarily been connected to people and Blacks in the community that serve our people, that provide wraparound resources for them, housing for them, get them, you know, in-home supports and services. The infrastructure in our community, the social service, human structure, infrastructure, it has never been tied to what we consider the most progressive members of our community. And so due to some of my experiences in both arenas, I'm able to bring both of them to the table so that when we have marches and conventions like this, you also get solid things that people want, career counseling and career development for the boys and the men that attend, health checkups and links to counseling and therapy. When they attend this convention, the advance and link up to other Blacks in business and economics and economic opportunities. So, you know, we're talking about what? Building coalitions of people that aren't exactly the same, but putting meat to these demonstrations and rallies so that they stick. Let's look at it from another perspective, you know, as we build this thing along with policy lines. We believe, my dear brother, that a lot, when it comes to the question of the Black man and the Black male and our boys, that some might be Republican, some might be Democrat, some might be independent, some might be Black nationalist, Pan-Africanist, some might not be any of that. They just working class. But everybody wants to see the Black man or the African-American male on his feet, productive, out of jail, out of prison, being a good family man, a father, and certain indicators. Regardless of politics, everybody wants to see that. And to be honest, even more than just black people want to see that, except those that just want to outright destroy us, because they are those. So what I'm saying is, along that common front, that common line that the Million Man March, those men, and that resonated across party lines and ideological and religious lines for a reason. And we have not completed that job. Everybody wants to see the black man get up. Now, and in doing that, a man like me, it reminds me of a certain scripture that Paul said. It's Corinthians 9 and 19. And it says, to paraphrase him, he says that at 9 and 23, he said, I had to be all things to all people in hope that I could save some. Earlier in that, he says, I had to go to the Jew and to be appear as a Jew and like those under the law in order to win over the Jew. I had to go to those that were not under the law and be like those that were not under the law in order to win those not under the law, even though I am under the law. He said, I had to go to those that were weak and appear to be weak to win over the weak, and so forth. Paul says, what are we saying, my dear brother? I go different places. I have to go in the church and when I, as an organizer, and I have to appeal directly to them in the Pentecostal church and those with the Holy Ghost, because I understand the preacher has my people, and therefore we want them and are bringing them on board with our march and our convention. I go to the Nation of Islam. A Nation of Islam, Sunni Muslim, don't want nothing to do with Farrakhan. And I'm going to say, Assalamu alaikum rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and I'm going to talk to them right from the Quran and the Hadith and talk to them in their language. I'm going to go to the Nation of Islam and talk to them, Elijah Muhammad, to them. I'm going to go to the Hebrew Israelites. I'm going to go to the Rasta and talk their language to them. What am I saying, dear brother? That the effort to unify our people, we have to go to all sincere means to get it done, because these times are serious. And, brother, I don't know how long we're going to have to be coming up with plans and so forth. It's a dangerous time. I fear time is running out, and therefore all my efforts right now for the next several months is going to be helping organize black men, and I got my hands full legally, fighting case after case around this country, just fighting in this court system of the United States of America.
And with that said, as far as the court cases with the Justice Department and now this conservative bent of the Supreme Court, what do you think of our chances as African black people looking forward from your vantage point?
It's a very tricky situation. The Supreme Court seat, as the last pick proves, Gorsuch, they come from the executive branch. And as much as Donald Trump has low poll ratings and he's a fiasco and he's in the muck and the mire of his administration, yet he has achieved getting his way on that Supreme Court bench. He has slid the numbers in his direction. And what are we saying? We're already saying that the court system in general, even if it's not under Donald Trump, is not fair and arbitrary to black people. The police claims that are heard in the average federal court anywhere in America are not on favorable terms to black people or police victims of any race. The rules and laws and the leeway given police under qualified immunity and privilege and the deference given to them is not conducive to solving these laws, these statutes that are coming from the Supreme Court and ratified by the Supreme Court and ratified by these federal judges. They are not laws and precedents that are likely to bring a conclusion to the problem, and they cannot cure the racism that is the root of many of the problems and the beatings. And so it's a tough situation. It means, number one, brother, no matter how tough it is and how much right now we know of America, the obstacles facing us, we can't cop out We can't zone out, and we can't avoid the problem. Meaning that as an attorney, all I can say is we need more attorneys. To every brother under the sound of my voice and others that want to go to law school and fight these cases because they need to be fought, and justice can be done now. Don't get me wrong, justice can be done, but it's a fight, but we need more black lawyers. So I'm calling because I'm on the line saying we need more investigators and law students and all of that. I need help in black lawyers for justice, and I'm not ashamed to say to anybody on this phone line and anybody listening, go on and get your education. Go on and get up and get on into law school, any law school in America, and get what you can out here right now to fight this battle that is going on right now. So, you know, it's not a pretty situation, but it's a situation that we have to man up to and fight, if you know what I mean. We cannot duck the fight, and we will not be able to complain about the conditions in the courtroom, the condition with the elections, the condition with anything unless we get up and fight. Politically, brother, I don't know where the situation is headed. Donald Trump is in power. If Steve Bannon is right, he's got a 30% chance of making it through his first term. And we don't know whether we're going to make it through his first term. But on another level, this man has won every battle he has come up against, and he has a solid block of white people, known and unknown voters, that are 100% with him. And he may be in for a double term. If he can stabilize himself, he may be in for two terms and more Supreme Court picks and more federal picks. As wild as he is and as wild as that seems, it can be a reality here in the wild, wild west of the United States of America.
We're in conversation with attorney, organizer, and founder of Black Lawyers for Justice. Brother Malik Zulu Shabazz is with us in conversation. And we got some phone calls on hold. Attorney Shabazz, now I know that you got a little time constraints this evening, but you let me know, you know, when we come in close or you know, when we come in close to the time, you got a lot
to leave. Sure. I'm enjoying the conversation.
Good. I'm going to hold these callers just for a minute. I want to bring something up. You know, with the incident that happened in Charlottesville and with the rise of the alt-right and others and the attacks on black people in New York, I think it was when that guy left Maryland, went up to New York and killed some black folks that were homeless. A guy did something similar in Louisiana, went down there and picked on some black targets that he figured was easy targets. With this type of stuff happening, and then the church murder that happened with the boy that went in there and killed nine of innocent people praying in church, with these attacks on black people, do you think that some of the conversation among a lot of our groups and think tanks, just like you had the meeting at the Thurgood Marshall Center, that's a think tank. It was people there, organizations there. Do you think some of the conversation need to be ways that we can come up with to protect individuals and our community within the law against some of these type of attacks? And I'm talking about within the law because you're an attorney, so I know you're not going to say things that people can't do. But it's things legally that we can do because we see it. When white communities, things happen, whether it's disasters or anything else in white communities, all of a sudden you see these militias pop up. They did it in Houston. Richard? The Bayou Navy or whatever, the Cajun Navy.
Right, Bayou Navy.
Yeah, I think when that incident happened with Hurricane Katrina, all these militia groups popped up defending their communities, and it was legal. So it's ways that we can do things within the law to start defending ourselves because the police are not protecting us. Talk about some of these issues, Attorney Shabazz.
Yes, my dear brother, it is our nature. It is the nature of any man, and is obviously the nature of our men, to know that when our people are seen, like on TV in Charlottesville on August 12th, getting severely beaten and intimidated like that, and just the overall environment, knowing that the black family and the black women and sisters do not feel safe and secure. And we know our people are not secure. We have obviously reached a point where we have to reassess and reanalyze how we approach the situation. Now, we have been led for many years by persons that have advocated never advocated armed self-defense. That has pretty much been the standard of the leadership, even across all religious lines, the civil rights community. And I'm not knocking them or anything. I'm just saying we tried everything. You know, when Reverend Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton had the most of the sway over the people, they never once at any time advocated a policy of training or armed self-defense. We love the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam. And although they do advocate protection, unarmed but strong protection of their group, they do not advocate and have not advocated armed self-defense. And so we have come to a point in time, and then we've seen historically at other points where the Black Panther Party and others had some success with armed self-defense and also met stiff resistance and persecution due to taking a stance of armed self-defense. I say all this to say that we've come to a point in time right now in America where we have to say that not just the Black Panthers or a small group of us should be trying to take the responsibility for the defense of the community, but every black man, every black male must understand that it is his duty to protect our nation and our family and our babies, and that well-trained, well-prepared persons with mental stability and a solid mind should certainly have armed self-defense. Has to be a code in our community, has to be a code in our homes. That just has to be done. It cannot be. There's no more negotiating or because the circumstances and environment have proved that it's an absolute necessity. And so, but it can't be limited, my dear brother, to legal, and I say legally, armed self-defense. We have operated below our legal rights. Tomorrow at our opening news conference, pardon the noise.
No, don't worry about it.
We have the urban sharpshooters. We have the urban sharpshooters, and they're here by Brother James McCoy. They're on Facebook. They're the fastest growing group of gun owners in the black community growing across America. I'm helping them legally in many areas because areas like Washington, D.C., the laws and our politicians told us that we couldn't have weapons here. You couldn't have a pistol or a firearm. You couldn't have the right to carry your weapon on you. And they said because we were much too violent in our communities and we would kill ourselves. But it came to be seen that when the white people moved here, the white people attacked the laws and the laws changed.
Attorney Shabazz?
Yeah, the white people,
oh, okay. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I'm right here. The white people came and the white people said, I'm not living in no Washington, D.C., and I can't pack my gun. I'm not living here in Washington, D.C., and I can't have my pistol out on the street dealing with these Negroes. And they went to court, the federal court, the Supreme Court, and overturned the mayor, the city council, and made them change all their laws, despite black people hollering. Since the laws have changed, there's been no rise in murders or anything due to the gun law or anything. So what are we saying is we have to have our Second Amendment rights. We have to exercise our Second Amendment right. And in general, as a group, this is what the Black Man Movement is teaching. Black Man Movement is saying it's not just up to identifiable groups. Just as brothers, as men, we have to have a network all the way across America, a network and a code amongst us that we are practicing self-defense in our communities, that you and I have that network outside of organizations, movement. A mass movement of us knowing that the code in our community, on our families and our blocks, is that it's all for self-defense. And nobody amongst us in the black family and the black nation is the enemy and is the target for our weapons. You know? And so that's just the kind of policies we have to enact. And on a more specific level, yes, we need just better security. better security and better training in many, many situations here. Yeah.
You know, before I go to the phones, let me. I want to share with you. It's not a funny story, but it's a story that made me think. I had Charles Cobb on a while ago that wrote the book, This Nonviolent Stuff Will Get You Killed. He was one of the organizers with King and others down there in Montgomery and in the South when they were organizing. And he talked about when the meetings would go around to different houses. He told us on the air that one particular week the meeting went around to Martin Luther King's house. And they came there, and before the meeting started, several of the brothers was, you know, looking for chairs to sit down. And one of the brothers told a man, don't sit in that chair. So he said, well, what? Martin Luther King had some guns under the seat, the cushion. So he said, oh, I didn't know I was going to sit on guns. So he said, Bayard Rustin jumped up and said, brother, you know, we're running a nonviolent movement here. I think we still got Brother Malik Shabazz.
Hold on. Take me back. I cut off a little bit where you said Bayard Rustin.
Yeah,
that's
well.
In a quieter place I am now.
Okay.
You said Bayard Rustin.
Yeah, well, Charles Cobb told us that the meetings would go around to different homes. So he said one time it came back around to Dr. King's home. So they all came there, and before the meeting started, they were just gathering, talking. And then when it came time for them to take seats, the one brother told another brother, don't sit in that chair. Come to find out, Dr. King had some guns under the cushion. So Bayard Rustin told Dr. King, he said, hey, brother, what you doing with these guns in this house? He said, we're running a nonviolent movement. He said, well, we might be running a nonviolent movement, but he said, my house been bombed. He said, I need these guns for protection. So he said, you know, after words going back and forth, he said when the meetings came back around to Dr. King's house, they didn't see the guns. But he said he knew Dr. King didn't get rid of his guns. So he just made – I just thought it was an interesting story that he told us about his own experience dealing with King and others doing those organizing. In fact, later on, Dr. King used the Deacons for Defense, I think, when – what was that? The March Against Fear and a few other marches. He used the deacons to protect the people. So I just want to throw that out there.
I like hearing that because that confirms what Dr. Khalid Muhammad told me, that nonviolence as a tactic is okay, but as a philosophy is not. See, you're telling me that King used it as a tactic, but philosophically he was willing to get that gun to save his life.
And there's no nation of people, whether they declare themselves or not, that have some mechanism of defense. And that is, you know, just no nation, no species will have no mechanism of defense in relationship to any opposition that's going to destroy them. So it's just natural to have some method that we recognize have to be dealt with. And a lot of the things that concern me is, and you raised, Brother Shabazz, is that under 45, they're talking about the only ones who can have guns, call them nuclear bombs, are them. And that's definitely where other people are saying, that don't even make sense. Take North Korea or even Iran.
Yes,
sir.
Let me grab a couple of these calls. 719 error code, 719. 719. 719. Let me put you back on hold. Let's go to 267. 267 error code, 267.
Yes, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Good. Richard, how are you, Brother Richard?
Good.
And how are you, Attorney Tweekster? How are you, Brother Shabazz? How are you, Brother Shabazz?
You're doing fine, my dear brother. I'm fine. Pleasure to be on with you.
Brother, you sound fine. And around the last time I was in your presence was in the 80s. And I went to school with Conrad. I don't know if you use the last name Muhammad anymore. We went to Lincoln University together. And I'm happy to know that you are still focused. And I'm saying that to say that in the midst of you, I was around Dr. Ali Muhammad, and we always took out a trip number 12 in Philadelphia. And we always looked at D.C.'s market, the intellectuals. You know, you had Dr. Eileen there, and you know, but Philadelphia had a reputation of being like on the rough side in New York. But something about the brothers from D.C. that was very intellectual, they would keep it going. Y'all would set the pace. But, brother, I'm going to say this to you, that if Khaled was living right now, he'd be proud of you. Because you were among some brothers, brother, who went the other way, didn't stay focused like you did. I have to mention the names. And I like what you're saying. I like what you're going to do. And I was always with Khaled when he came to Philadelphia. He would come to the Reverend Barry Shango, or sometimes he would come to back Messiah and give his forms. And he was just always so great. His tactics on guerrilla warfare, his philosophies of self-defense. And I'm happy to see that you're still in direction, brother, because a lot of people start off one way and in another. I think Comrade Artillery is now a Christian minister in New York. And I do believe that Chaim Shate, who was once a part of the Black Panther Party with you, is doing something now, differently. But I like what you're saying. I like what you're doing. And I remember, I had some friends at that time, because I had got waitlisted for Florida A&M's Law School. But I had applied for Howard University's Law School right around the time before Dean Ramsey's came, because he was trying to clear up some things and bring up the standards of Howard University. So the advice that you give people to go to law school, or the advice that you give people on organizing, is all good. But I want to say one thing to you, sir. Since you're in D.C., and I think you kind of understand it too, comment what's going on. I like people to know the importance of this vote in 2018 and the importance of the vote in 2020. Electing a candidate that's for the people and removing Donald Trump. Like you said, his base has not shaken, not once. And if we don't get ourselves together to remove this person politically, and we still have to worry about the Electoral College voting misrepresentation, having voter education, all these things are at the forefront. But all these things that you're doing and wanting to get together to protect our community is one thing. The vote is another thing, and the direction that directly you should be going is another thing, too. So I'm happy you came on this show. It's a very progressive show, brother. I'd like to hear you come back.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate your warm words. And my text and my WhatsApp is 202-875-9623. 202-875-9623. And what I want to say is, brother, it's not easy. You know, at 19, your analysis is very perceptive. In the late 1980s at Howard University, that was like Raz Baraka. Brother Raz Baraka was the head of Black NEOF on the campus of Howard University. There was student revolutionaries everywhere, and the consciousness was high. Public Enemy was on the rise, ex-Klan, and that was a very great era. Many of my classmates, we were all on the red, black, and green. Many of us had taken over the administration building and all of those kind of things. And as the years go by, brother, the pressures of life in this world, you have to pay student loans, bills, all of that can impact, or anything can impact. And you are right, the numbers dwindle. I'm blessed to have survived a lot of attacks on me when I was defending Dr. Muhammad at law school. They were attacking, trying to make sure I didn't graduate, attack me at school. I'm still down to this day being on the black identity extremist list. You know, brother, Minister Louis Farrakhan told me at one point in time, way back, well, he said this about him and Khalid Muhammad, 1994 at a dinner table. He said, brother, the white man is never going to forgive you and I, Minister Farrakhan talking to Dr. Khalid. He's never going to forgive us for what we have said. So it's too late now. Now, with this internet and all of this, I know the feeling. And so I'm in so deep, black man, it doesn't make no sense. I can't apologize my way out. I don't want to apologize my way out, man. I'm all the way in deep. And what I aim to show right now is that despite opposition, I'm still blessed to be successful because, look, I got your support. If I go to work at my law office, the phone is going to be ringing by a lot of black people who want justice. And even though I have enemies and things that would take me out of the struggle, even when I'm out here making my moves and making business moves, there's always some black person that loves something I said or did and is giving me the hookup and the link up. So I have to still say, brother, that God has blessed me, and I thank you. I want to link with you. 202-875-9623. That's my text. I appreciate your words. I try to keep doing the best I can.
Let's try that line again. 719-719. Area code 719. Okay.
Hey, Elliot. Yeah. I'm not going to be able to speak right now. Thank you, though.
Okay. All right. Let's go to 215. 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot. How you doing, my brother?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Hey, Brother Richard.
Yeah, how you doing now?
I'm doing all right. Hey, Brother Shabbat. Assalamu alaikum, my dear brother.
Well, alaikum salam, sir.
You know, Brother Shabazz, it's an honor to talk to you tonight, just like Brother Timothy said before me. You has been one of them brothers that I always had a lot of respect for because you stand up with your shoulders straight and your head up, erect and upright. That's why I have so much love and respect for you, Brother Shabazz. And I want to deal, you're more than welcome, my brother. I just want to deal with a couple of things. I'm going to talk about you're working with different parts of the black community, but I want to deal with first, Brother Shabazz, with the gun issue. I'll be the first to tell you here on Sylvester Radio, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, they'll tell you I'm not a big fan of guns. I'm not a gun person. However, Brother Shabazz, I'm a realist. You know what I mean? Like you said about Dr. King. Dr. King, see, nonviolent was a tactic, but as a philosophy, like Dr. Khaled said, you know, it's not a good tactic that from the philosophy to have, especially dealing with the real life situation. So while me personally don't like guns, I'm realist to know that a black man, like any other human being, Brother Shabazz, have a right to protect themselves. So I don't have no problem with black people, you know, having responsible gun ownership to protect themselves. And as you well know, Brother Shabazz, our dear brother, Dr. Khaled, may Allah be pleased with him. You know, when the Honorable Minister Louis Furkan first started doing the work that rebuilding the nation, when Dr. Khaled used to be on post to protect the Honorable Minister Louis Furkan, he had a gun, as you know, inside of a Bible, as you know, to protect the minister.
Mm-hmm.
So you know where Dr. Khaled was coming from, and I say all praise be to Allah for that, brother. And again, like I said, I don't have no problem with black people arming themselves and being able to protect themselves because Brother Elliot, right here on this show right here, Time for the Awakening, in years past, Brother Elliot has had guests on there about having responsible gun ownership. But like Brother Elliot has said, you know, we know there's nothing wrong with our people being able to protect themselves at the hands of these white racist, supremacist, off-right, white racist cops, whatever the entities may be. We have a right to protect themselves. And like Elliot said, we know we got to have guys that have guns, not to use them on killing each other in the community, but like Dr. King did back then, for responsible ownership. And like Elliot said, don't watch that foolish that you see on these videos, Brother Shabazz, with a brother shooting a gun sideways, you know, all that crazy stuff, firing a gun sideways, holding the gun, all that nonsense, but have responsible gun ownership with and stuff could be, and sisters for that matter too, can be well trained on the use of how to use a firearm, how to break a gun down, all that kind of stuff. So we could be prepared just for defense alone, you know. So I don't see nothing wrong with that. So I encourage our people to have, you know, across America, they want to, you know, use a firearm or learn how to shoot a gun and stuff. All praises be, do what you have to do and stuff. So like I said, by me not being a gun person myself, don't mean I'm against our people arming themselves just to be able to protect the community. So I'm cool with that. And you know, Brother Shabazz, you also said about how working with different segments of the black community, and me being a member of the Nation of Islam, I can relate to what you're saying because I have talked to members of the different Islamic community, Sunni Muslims, Ahmadiyyas, and I take the premise that you take, Brother Shabazz. We are black people. Like I told the brother, I said, but we all say assalamu alaikum. I said, but like Brother Malcolm said, when that cop stopped you and he put that gun in your head, that nightstick, he don't care whether you're in the Nation of Islam, Sunni, Shiite, Ahmadiyya, whatever. You're a black man. It's saying he don't ask you whether you're a Christian, a Methodist, or whatever like that. So I'm like you, Brother Shabazz. I'm willing to work with any segments of the black community, male and female, that's for our people. Even though I don't support homosexuality, but if a brother, sister, LGBT, and they got the concerns of our people at heart, I can work with them, you know what I mean? So I'm like you, Brother Shabazz. I will reach out, and I did that, and I'm continuing to do it, to reach out to every segment of our community to find sincere black men and women that want to improve our condition against this white racist system we live under. So, Brother Shabazz, you spot on what you're saying and what you're about, and your heart is in the right place. You're a good brother and a good human being, and I pray that Allah continue to bless you, brother, and keep you motivated and keep you doing the things that you're doing. Like you said, the best advice you gave, like Brother Timothy said, is telling our people to go to law school, to learn the law, become lawyers and stuff like that for our sisters and brothers. Because I was just telling them on the black radio station here in Philadelphia, I was trying to tell these brothers right here in Philadelphia, get off that corner, brother. I said, pull your pants up. I said, stop, take that blunt out of your mouth and that 40 and stop. And this is that liquid crack known as gangster rap. Listen to positive rap music like Public Enemy, X-Clan. Stop listening to that foolishness. I said, take advantage of these opportunities. Go to these schools, these law schools. Get your engineering degree, your law degree, your medical degree. Be a positive force in the community. So Brother Shabazz, you got the right advice and the right attitude for our people, brother. And I just pray you continue to do what you're doing, because you is not going to be deterred. You focus on what you're doing. And like I said, Brother Shabazz, I'm just honored to talk to you, brother. I never had a chance, Brother Shabazz, to meet you formally. I have seen you in person a couple of times, but I never had a chance to really shake your hand. So, inshallah, I hope I get a chance to formally shake your hand one day when you come in the Philadelphia area next, Brother Shabazz, okay?
My dear brother, I'm honored. I appreciate you, brother. You make me emotional because I agree with you so much, and I thank you so much. And I love our brothers in Philadelphia. Philadelphia has always been a conscious and a strong city. And I want to say that you pretty much wrapped it up on the issue of the guns. You said everything that needed to be said. And what I would like to say that it's much bigger than just arms and guns. One thing that the entire community that we all can agree on is that the black man must be physically fit. See, whether he's armed or unarmed, he must be physically fit. You know, I can't go around everywhere, every courtroom I'm in. I can't walk around everywhere armed. It's not like that in my city. But I have to be in shape, and we have to be in shape. And I've noticed and I've seen, my dear brother, that the Nazis and the skinheads, these men are in shape. These men are working out. So at the Black Men's Movement and what we're talking about here, and it's no new organization and all that. It's just a broad-based movement of brothers that agree that the black man is first and primary. What we're basically saying here is that physical fitness is the base of physical defense, that being in shape, and that we want brothers, yeah, we want more high-intensity cardiovascular exercise, more lifting weights, and just getting in shape. And then, however you choose, if you want to choose the armed or the unarmed option, but by all means, we do have to be in shape for this battle, and that's going to be good for longevity for our men, longevity for our children, and just putting the emphasis on physical fitness. Even in the New Black Panther Party, when I led an armed group for all of those years, yes, sometimes many would have weapons, but you have to be in shape before you join anybody's army on the planet. That's why they make you get in shape. So I'm still saying right here, let us resonate on the first level of defense, is that we all, no matter what age we are, we should commit as black men to get in better shape. That's one of the main objectives of our convention. My dear brother, I want to shake your hand. I want you to be a part of this black men's movement so we can work together to help our people. And I'd love to come to Philadelphia soon. Shake your hand. Love you, black man.
Let's try another one here. 267. 267, Eric Oak.
Yes. Brother Shabazz.
Yes, sir.
I'm back again, brother. I didn't have that number, brother. That's 202. What is it again?
Oh, 875.
875.
9623.
Go ahead.
Let me double check that. 875.
I'm sorry,
202-875-9623.
Okay, brother.
I'm double checking it now.
Yeah, 875-9623. Text me so you can be part of the network. And we're going to let you know everything that we're doing. And because so I want to be clear on this march. We're not just building for a big march or a convention. Right now, we're looking for 10,000 black men from all walks of life that want to improve our people's condition. And when they hear a message like this, it makes sense to them. And that's all it is, you know. Nothing real hard or fancy, just something very simple. You know, we as black men are a fraternity. We are a natural born fraternity, and that's what we're trying to work on.
We're gonna take a brief break. Attorney Shabazz, how's your time?
I can stay on another 15 minutes and I have to make a run.
Good. We'll take a break. In fact, let's do, Richard, go ahead. You take the, because we're going to just go. We can take the breaks any other time. Go ahead, Brother Richard.
Brother Shabazz, you know, as you were saying about this, the 10,000 men, now you say rally, that's April 21st and 22nd. Am I right with that?
Yeah, here's how it's going to go. The convention's going to start at least on the 18th right now. The convention starts on the 18th through the 22nd. The 21st and 22nd of April is a Saturday and a Sunday. We just had a board meeting yesterday, and so the board voted for the Saturday, the 21st, that the board voted that half of that time will be spent in Southeast Washington, D.C., because our work is in our community. It's in the hood. That's where we're gathering. We got some of the major music groups and all of that going to be with us. And we're going to, the young people are going to be with us. Matter of fact, it's a family affair. But after that, on Saturday the 21st, the board voted that we march 10,000 strong on 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And, you know, and that's not something that I was really pushing. I was kind of hesitant on it because I know they would want to say that Shabazz is trying to be the radical, but my more practical, more civil rights brothers demanded it. They said with all of these athletes and everybody taking a knee, with everybody going at Trump, they say, well, why not bring it to his door? So on April 21st, the 10,000 Black Men March is going to move from the hood to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And that should be extremely strong if 10,000 or more black men make that move. And the next day, the 22nd, back at that same location in Southeast, the big chair, where our big stage is set up, where our booths are going to be set up. What kind of booths? That booth where you can get career counseling, that booth where you can get your prostate and your blood pressure checked, that booth where you can get counseling or therapy, that booth where you can connect with people like Haki Ami and Boyce Watkins and our economists, all our services lined up and our big mass convention rally going on again that Sunday, April 22nd, outside, and other workshops in the surrounding locations around this big area. Which, not so coincidentally, my brother, this area in Southeast is a key area that is one of the last stands for gentrification that is being taken in this city. And it is an area that has been targeted for destruction. And we aim to show through our convention and our march that there's life in this city, life in our people, and that everybody who thinks that they should automatically be driven out of areas in this city, that there is a way to take a stand and to stop us from being driven out. So we got a lot riding on this, and we got an agenda that makes sense. You know, we got some things that make sense for people that are practical as well as those that are radical.
You know, if I may follow up.
We want results. We want long-term results, though. I got to say this. We want long-term results and long-term relationships. We've run out of time and patience for symbolism.
And that's why my question earlier about infrastructure, because it seems that we need to have where we can, of these different political persuasions or interests that have, that we can be able to sit down and truly eke out policy that everybody will implement. As you said, I like what you said in relationship to our health. That should be a policy, not the government push, but that we push. And it should be all those organizations that we are part of. And if we can come down and say that, then we'll be speaking in one voice, even though it'll be in different dialects, as a metaphor. Now, I recognize after the Million Man March, there was a large swell of political participation by Black people, especially Black men. I mean, and they were able to track that. Do you think that after the 10,000 men Black rally convention, that we can get the same resurgence, or even if it's necessary at this point in time?
I think we can take that good momentum, but I think we can even go further. You know, this is an open process right now. It starts with our basic objectives, but then we plan on going further. For example, there's strong talk here that a independent Black political party will emerge by April, at least here in the District of Columbia. That will set an example for other cities.
Okay.
And even though the Democrats are dominant here, a independent Black party could be a significant power broker, a party that is fighting for the housing of the residents and fighting for our people's survival here, fighting against Black depopulation or whatever. That this party with registration and votes could tilt certain things in our favor here. Moreover, you know, we're willing to, as we move into this process, we want to, increase political big participation, but we want to increase it on a strategic level. Like, we're open right now to dialogue on the political question, talking to men like you, talking to others, to see how we're not just stuck with this option of either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. There must be a better answer. I don't purport to have all the answers, but I'm open to negotiation and conversation. But I will say this, we're going to be very politicized. We're going to be very politicized and very powerful, and we're here to wield power here where the location of the march and convention is in this city. Let me give you an example. Development is going rampant here. Buildings are going up and cranes are going out of style. Going up all the time. We're getting ready to establish policy here. If we allow you to build here, if money and funds and jobs and opportunities are not going to Black men in our city, then we will not allow you to build here. Black men's movement and our movement and the 10,000 Black Men March are going to move. If it's not coming to help our people and this money's coming in to actually help drive us out, then we're going to be politicized to the extent where you will not be making it back in the office for these positions that you are in, and also that these construction sites and developers are going to meet a serious challenge if we allow you to build here. On another level, we're going to be politically involved to the extent where we're using the referendum system and others, and we may stop certain development here. So this is heavy politics here, down to fielding certain candidates on a local level and all of that. We plan on playing hardball, but we want to talk with others about national political action. We believe that the options that are currently on the table have been insufficient, but if we as Black men and as Black people honestly explore other actions, we turn these marches and numbers and momentum, we have to turn it into some political power on our way to really pure self-determination and a nation of our own, ultimately, one day.
Let's go to 404 area code. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Hey, this is Big West calling from the ATL. How y'all gentlemen doing tonight? Elliot and my brother Malik and Richard.
How are you, sir?
Hey.
Look here, y'all. I got Elliot, you know how I roll, man. I hope y'all can hear me, man. Y'all hear me real well?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Now, look here. We talking about weapons of these devils, right? What they using, right?
Go ahead.
Okay. I got weapons where put this number down in your search engine. 3951134. Again, just search that number. It's a patent number for a weapon these devils got, man. okay? And this weapon is, I know it's going to be hard for y'all to see this, but it's a weapon where they can go in and check your brain page, man, and see what you're thinking. It's called remote neuromonitoring, okay, where they can aim electromagnetic wave to you and check your brain waves, and then it goes back to a computer, and they can see what you're thinking, man, okay? And this ain't no BS. Okay.
Well, brother, hold one second.
Yes, sir.
Brother, if that was the case, I'd be in jail right now.
Well, you overriding, man. You overriding. Okay, I'm a black extremist, man. Okay, I study these devil's weapons, man. Okay, they got something where y'all think y'all can go get you a gun license or whatever, get you a gun. They got it where they can fire this laser weapon where your gun won't even fire, man. Okay? So these little pea shooters these devils got, God
but
got
brother, hold one second.
Yes,
brother,
sir.
You're telling me some strong stuff. But let
yes,
me
sir.
Ask you this, brother. The white man can't be that powerful.
Exactly.
Well,
if the white man was that powerful, how is it that Kim Jong-un, here's a little man walking around Korea right now, he's threatened the United States like she has never been threatened before, has defied her like nobody has been threatened before, and he's kicked back in his living room right now watching TV.
I'm glad you said about Kim Jong-un, man. It's all orchestrated. Kim Jong-un got tungsten, man. Okay, so it's all orchestrated.
Brother, everything is not a conspiracy. My dear
sir,
brother.
I'm giving you
no,
facts,
sir.
I'm giving
okay.
you facts.
Everything.
I'm giving you facts.
No,
I'm giving you facts,
you,
man. Kim Jong-un ain't got no power, man. Okay? This is all what you see with this manufactured BS between Kim Jong-un and Trump. It's all BS, man. It's all a game,
okay,
my
well,
brother.
Let me ask you this.
Don't believe that, Wes.
Well, let me ask him a question. Hold on. Let me ask him a couple questions.
Yes, sir.
So according to you, that ultimately, the white man is just all powerful over everything. Is that right?
No, they got weapons. God run this, the Most High Yah. Allah run this, man. I'm just studying what they got. But God got the ultimate weapon, man.
Let me ask you this: has anybody ever stood up against them, and it wasn't a conspiracy?
Well, I don't know about anybody. I know a few brothers have. All I deal is with black man.
That's what I'm trying to say, black man. We can't
yes,
have
sir,
a teaching.
Man.
I love what you're saying, black man. I know it's plenty of conspiracy. But what I'm saying, my dear brother, is let's not put a teaching out there. Right now, there's enough fear in the black man already. There's enough hesitation already. Yes, we got to be
my brother.
Protected.
Let him finish, Wes.
Okay. Hear me, Wes. All
right.
I'm saying I know we got to be wise. I know we got to be protective. I know we got to be cautious. I know we got to look out for the neuromagnetic brainwave machine by the white man. But, brother, still we have to be fearless if we're going to get this job done, and we can't teach a teaching that's going to paralyze everybody and make everybody afraid to move.
Yes, sir.
That's
but see,
I'm
my
saying.
Point is, my man, I'm not teaching fear. I'm just telling what's out there, man. I'm
well,
not scared,
Wes,
man.
Let me say this before I move on
I'm
to the next.
I'm 60 years old,
Wes,
man. I'm not scared. Okay?
Wes. Let me say this before I move on to the next call.
Yeah.
The last war that this country won was World War II. They've been in other fights since then. They lost in Vietnam. They lost in Korea. That wasn't orchestrated. That was a loss. They ended up splitting up the country, but they didn't defeat Korea. You know that, right? They didn't defeat Korea, and it wasn't orchestrated. Those people dying over there, and some of our people died over there. That wasn't orchestrated. They didn't defeat Korea. They didn't defeat Vietnam.
And they're saying in the hills of the Eastern world that they can't figure out how to stop the onslaught of a, as they call, non-state.
Well, I agree with y'all wholeheartedly, but I'm not preaching fear. I'm just waking people up to what's out there because I ain't never scared, man. I'm 60 years old. I'm too damn old to be scared, man.
Thanks for your call, brother.
My brother, my birthday is October 12th, the same as Dick Gregory. So I'm just spreading information, man. I don't do no fear, man.
Well, thanks for your call, brother.
We love you, brother. We love you, brother.
Preach your blessing, man. I love y'all, man.
All right.
Stay strong.
Keep this fight going, man. I love y'all, man.
All right.
Thank you so much. We love you too, my dear brother.
Let's go to Colorado. Let's go to Colorado again.
Hey, how y'all doing, Elliot?
Yes, sir.
Brother Richard.
I know.
Good evening to y'all out there in the East. Brother Shabazz, thank you for joining the show today. And
No problem.
I did want to say this, listening to y'all. I'm going to have it out quick. What my first question would be, what is your take on...
Is it Ramon? Wait a minute. You're breaking up. Wait a minute. You got to ask that again. You're breaking up.
Okay. Can y'all hear me better?
I hear you now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What is your take on the role of women encouraging the you know, family members, since we know the mother or the woman is usually the strongest, you know, advocator, who typically, when it comes to males, they're going to try to win her affection. And typically when we see that played out, we'll see it in sports. What I attribute to is getting the trophy, getting the NFL contract. What is your take on how to get the mothers, the women, to turn that type of spirit onto what you're talking about? And I want to say this before I get off, and I'm going to have to listen to you. We're dealing with a situation where this is my feeling. You mentioned military, like Elliot just spoke. I ain't no military vet or nothing, got a very short stint in it. I do agree. You got to have mind, and you got to have the body and the mind. They got to go together. You can't have one without the other, and I agree. I was a member of the first Million Man March. I was there. And one thing I tell everybody, if you was there, you should already know you're on the FBI list. Why would you even think twice? So with that being asked about mothers' roles and helping us raise the spirit of these men to get out here and want to look like men and hold a weapon and want to be a soldier and eventually a warrior, you know, what are we going to do with that? Because right now, as you already know, and it ain't new, I mean, everybody is BIE. And here's my last statement. We should be hashtagging people like Eminem should be the first ones on the front line, since they want to go on BET and hijack our culture, our styles, and speak, but yet rap about issues that ain't even got nothing to do directly with us on our so-called platform. Thank you, and I'm listening.
Thank you for the call, Brother Mo.
My dear brother, I say this, my dear sir, you're right on many points. I say the way we win those mothers and the way we win our mothers and the black women in general is we go after our sons and go after the youth in our community, even if they're not our sons. And if we as men can show that we can get a handle on these young men, and not just to give them guns. They got guns. They killing each other wild right now, like wildfire right now.
Yeah.
If we can go out with our, if we can show that as black men that we're making some improvement in the overall condition of the adolescents, of the youth, and as a whole, that we're taking an interest in the young men in our community as a whole, we got the black woman. If we can work on this black man and get him to commit more to the black woman, get the black woman understanding that he's teaching, and our teaching is that the black man should be committed and committed more to the black woman, more committed to his family and the institutions that will make our family great, you are going to see more response out of this black woman. If she sees this black man coming together, challenging Donald Trump, sees him coming together, challenging the politics in our community, sees him coming together, sees him rising as a man, you're going to get such a response out of these women like we have never seen before. So that's what we're kind of working on now, not just for a march or a convention, but a general movement amongst us where we're coordinating activities and they know that there is a black men's movement out here and we can make a difference. There's some things you'll see as we come into this convention is what I'm talking about. It's by God's grace, it'll come before our very eyes. We have our own university that we're opening up in December, and this university has classes that young black men can attend on Saturday. They can go online anywhere in the country and attend the rites of passage for young black males and females, for young black males in their own class at Shabazz University.
I like it.
So it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen overnight. But if we show the black woman some signs that of life in Lazarus, if we show her some signs, trust me, she is going to give us a hero's welcome.
Let's go to Newport News. Newport News, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm 64 years old. I like what I've been listening to for the last hour or so. I want to ask that young brother, when I hear you say you're going to stop what's going on in D.C. or whatever, that means, in my mind, at 64, I'm down here in Yorktown, Virginia, actually, right on the shores of the York River, James River, where our people were sold on auction blocks all around this peninsula. I want to ask you, are you minding the young people there at Howard and around you to stop what's going on in D.C.? It's going to be more than a march. You have to know what's going on with planning commissions, zoning commissions, and all of that. I hope when I hear you say, and I know you're a professional, when you say you're going to stop this, I hope you're growing a multifaceted organization that's doing just that, because you have to know who to trust inside these organizations to be able to stop these public-private use of government funds to run our people off. It's happening all over the country. I spent a lot of time trying to do it in small-time areas, so I want to know, is your organization that deep? God bless.
Yes, sir. So, wow.
Thank you for your question,
bro. Good question. You're exactly on point. It takes sophistication, and it takes knowing what you're doing to even try to approach this monster called gentrification. We're getting a grip on it. We know, we have an idea on how we're going to fight, and we're amassing those forces to fight. On tomorrow, October 16th, we're going to be live on blackmensmovement.org for our news conference. October 16th, 12 noon, East Coast time, blackmensmovement.org. You will hear some of the men who are our generals in the gentrification fight here, and they were going to outline some of the objectives for the fall. Sir, it is sophisticated. It's not just about demonstrating or opposing. Sometimes you have to do that. You have to harass city officials and zoning meetings and planning meetings, and ultimately you might have to demonstrate on stores and construction sites. Yeah, but you also got to know about real estate. You also got to know about property acquisition. You also got to know how to help people to maintain and stay in their homes. You also got to know what's happening in this city, in strategic think tanks, the National Capital Planning Commission, and other zoning meetings. It's no easy fight, like Amilcar Cabral say. We tell no lies and claim no easy victories. We don't have all the answers right now, but we're building the structure here to take a stand. What we're doing is we're gathering the dissatisfied. There are many dissatisfied. So we're gathering dissatisfied, and we're assembling, really, our think tank here to fight the real war. We've had some success here, but we're calling for help. So my sir, I recognize the depth of the problem, and we're trying to assemble the forces to fight the problem. We ask you to watch us and be patient with us.
I'll offer as much assistance as I can, because I'm telling you, I see it, young brother, that too many people think it's a superficial quick fix, something that's happening on TV. And I, from experience, without eating up a lot of time, unless you know the intricate details of how these systems work, you can end up just like Baltimore City did. You can end up with a DOJ agreement pushed by the first black president. And you find out that the judge has thrown out everybody who went through the process and put in the organization that he wanted. So you have to be careful about what you're dealing with.
I'd love for you to text me. I'd love for you to text me, and I'd love for you to advise me, sir.
Well, I do Black Talk Radio with Scotty sometimes, Scotty and Max. So I'll do what I can, and if I can offer any kind of research, I'm willing to. Have a good
day,
brother.
Thank you so much, brother.
Hey, brother, thank you
so
for your
much.
Call.
And again, I'm at 202-875-9623. That's where we can be reached, at the Black Men's Movement and even at Black Lawyers for Justice for now. I can't stay on too long. I got to make a move.
Well, listen, give me 2 minutes, Attorney Shabazz, because I just want you to give your opinion. We've been talking about it tonight. Different callers have brought it up. But that – this new COINTELPRO movement that, and you know that your name is on their list. What do you feel? Because you know our people had a strategy back then when this movement first came to fruition, and they used it to attack our leaders and killed a lot of them and destroyed movements. So if they're coming at this again, they're not coming at it the same way. What safeguards do we need as organizations now to help people that's on the forefront? Everybody's not going to get on the forefront, and I know that. Everybody can do something. That's clear. But what can we do now to protect our people that's making moves and on the forefront, in your opinion?
Yes, sir. That was a great question. I would say that we should offer support for those that might be under attack. Like, for example, like one of these Republican attorneys, he's an attorney named Clayman. He filed these lawsuits in Texas, two big federal lawsuits against Black Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
He filed it against the New Black Panther Party. He filed it against me. He filed it against Louis Farrakhan, Al Sharpton, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama. And it took effort for many of them to have to fight out of that case. They had to hire lawyers and everything. I'm already a lawyer, so I didn't hire no lawyer. I answered on behalf of myself, but it still took time. And it still took resources. So what I'm saying is in just one attack like that and other attacks, those young people that were named from Black Lives Matter in that suit and others, they need support. Support those who are coming under attack and who you know may come under attack. All right, those that are already known. For you who are not known or likely to be known, we need strong support. My advice to others is if we look back in time, the enemy trapped us a lot. They tricked us a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so we should have control over our egos, or have control over our mouths and control over what we do, and we should be careful. We shouldn't be fearful, but we should be careful. Like you shouldn't speak beyond your power to do, in my judgment. I'm not going to say never bite your tongue. Because I don't believe, just as a lawyer and in this environment, no man should speak out of his mouth everything that's in his mind. You know, that's number two. I think you got to be strong, but you got to be wise. You got to be tactical in this hour. So the enemy does not build up all kind of evidence on you online. So you can't be just spilling your mind on Facebook all the time. You can't be just spilling your emotions out all the time. We gotta watch what we say on these phones. Moreover, we want to make it clear that what we're doing is legal, that what we're doing is lawful,
mm-hmm.
that what we're doing is protected by the First Amendment, protected by the Second Amendment, that nobody here is going to should give the enemy probable cause or a reason to arrest them for any reason, because I don't think we have to. And so it's some things like that, because in the 60s, the early 70s, we got many political prisoners in the Black Panther Party, Black Liberation Army. Some of them did glorious acts. Some of them were accused of doing things that they didn't even do, and a lot of them ended up in jail. People are going to end up in jail, but we try to cut down on it. Cut down on the infighting, cut down on the things that cause the Panther Party to fight the Huey P. Newton side, to fight the Eldridge Cleaver side, and prior to that, the Malcolm X followers and the followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. We try now to keep down the infighting and the public feuds, and ultimately, again, don't worry too much about it. The FBI has always been spying on us one way or the other. They have more equipment now. They have better ways to do it. But nevertheless, we must understand that history is not on their side. Morality is not on their side. And ultimately, right is on our side. When you see these signs of them cracking down,
then you know that the end of a period of time of their world has come. When you see them allowing a president of the United States, who is an absolute embarrassment to them, when you see how desperate they are for leadership to accept what they have right now, we still know that we have the moral momentum right now. So I say the FBI identity parts are important. We should be wise. We should be yet strong, yet we should be cautious. We have all of that, but we also should be enlivened right now. We're enlivened to the point that we're at the changing of the guard of the worlds, and it's the time of the black man's rise. And to be very honest, as you see Trump in office, it's the time of the white world's demise. It's a changing guard of the worlds, and through strength and perseverance and humility, we're going to make it. Thank you all. Appreciate you, brothers. I love y'all, man. I want us to talk further and be family, okay?
Attorney Shabazz, before you leave us, give us those numbers again.
Numbers again and website.
Mm-hmm.
The text number to text me and text us at our offices is 202-875-9623. If it's a specific legal matter, you can write me at attorney.shabazz, attorney.shabazz, S-H-A-B-A-Z-Z, at yahoo.com. And again, at blackmensmovement.org at 12 noon tomorrow.
Okay.
The brothers, we will be coming on to explain what we're doing. Appreciate you. God bless you and black power, my brothers.
Thank you, brother. We'll talk to you soon. Brother Richard, we're going to take a brief break. And listening audience, we can take a brief break. We'll be in open forum the rest of the way. So you can get involved. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? You realize that nobody's going to save black people but us? if you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective, if you believe that leadership is as leadership does, and this means that the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who place and hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost, if you understand that black people must develop the mindset and the will to finance their own racial uplift organizational efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
Nah, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you want on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com. Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right? Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
Oh, make me wanna holler, throw up both my hands, yeah.
triggered habit. Won't listen. Panic is spreading. God knows where.
Welcome back. It's time for an awakening. I want to thank our guest this evening, attorney, organizer, and founder of Black Lawyers for Justice, Brother Malik Zulu Shabazz, spent some time with us this evening. Interesting conversation, letting the community know.
Yes, it definitely was.
Yeah.
It sets the foundation for what we should be doing all over the country, and especially in areas which we control, controlled by population, especially as he spoke about the gentrification that's going on, because that's the only way we'll get a handle on just how we move forward of taking ownership of not just ourselves, but the environment that we live in. And I think, the callers added to the dimensions that we need to be concerned about when we make these moves. And I really appreciate Brother Shabazz and even talking about the coalition necessary to do that.
Yeah, listen, I agree. That online meeting tomorrow with some of the men involved in down there in Washington area is blackmensmovement.org. Again, that's blackmensmovement.org. It's tomorrow at 12 p.m., 12 in the afternoon, so you can catch some of the issues, some of the men involved down in Washington, D.C. tomorrow. Richard, I want to read something here. If I can find it, it's a little messy here on this table. In reference to what we ended the conversation with, this published report saying FBI launches COINTELPRO 2.0 targeting black identity extremists. I would just read a couple of paragraphs from this report here. From this published report. It says the FBI released on August 3rd, just 9 days before a white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, turned deadly. The foreign policy obtained the report, which is marked for official use only. The document warns that black identity extremists pose a growing threat to law enforcement. In particularly cruel and unfounded assertions, the FBI claims that police attacks on black Americans could spur retaliatory lethal violence against police. The move is the latest intervention of a long tradition of the FBI targeting and tracking black activists. The most famous example is COINTELPRO, which was created in 1956 with the explicit intent to expose. Hold on a second. Okay. I'm sorry. To expose, disrupt, discredit, and otherwise neutralize activities of black nationalists, according to the FBI's own documents. So we see here that this is a new iteration of this COINTELPRO, which never really stopped. But the European feels as though that he needs to get a handle on what he considers black identity extremists when these white terrorists have been running rampant basically since this country was founded. But I just want our people to understand the gravity of what he's talking about, and the gravity what was done to our people during the age of the Black Power movement and this quote-unquote civil rights era. I want to play a clip from Hall of Fame journalist. He's passed on to the ancestors, Gil Noble, up there in New York. He had a television program called Like It Is, and he had several black luminaries that had visited the program and was part of his program. He did several documentaries. I want to play for you a clip of a part of a documentary that Gil Noble interviewed this guy and listen to what is stated in this documentary, and I'm quite sure that you'll be able to hear.
We've seen then how the decade of struggle ended. Many of the prominent figures like Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. were assassinated amidst an intense climate of hatred that government agencies were acutely aware of. In fact, the FBI contributed to creating the climate of hate. Moreover, the assassinations themselves appear to have been facilitated by an elaborate network of government and police agencies who were watching very closely every move that Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. were making, and then at the same time, they disappeared just as the assassinations occurred. But those were the leaders. What about the students, the troops of the movement? Well, they too were subjected to harassment. This document that you're looking at now shows how the FBI tried to divide factions within the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And the Black Panther Party was also subjected to heavy, heavy surveillance.
We knew the history of the FBI's infiltration tactics in other organizations, particularly the American Communist Party. There was already a record compiled that showed that the FBI was even in charge of various branches of the Communist Party. So we understood that police tactic of infiltration. There was a situation where, in a sense, the white racism was its own victim. Like, for racist reasons, J. Edgar Hoover had not recruited black agents. He had a lot of white agents. And it takes time to train some black agents. In the meantime, those white agents, try as they might, were not able to infiltrate our ranks because the Black Panther Party did not have any white members. Okay? And we relied upon people that we knew. And we kept people that we didn't know on another level. And I think this is why we didn't suffer more, put it that way, because they did catch up and start a crash program of recruiting black agents, and they very quickly filled that gap, but it took them about a year to do it.
In the summer of 1978, I interviewed a man who worked as an informer for the FBI during the 1960s. His name is Dothard Perry, also known as Ed Riggs, also known as Bill Perry, also known as Othello. How were you paid?
The pay was always in cash. Cash, and you would sign a card. It would go like this. A rendezvous or a drop-off point would be picked out either by yourself or the agent. You would meet the agent there, and usually it would be in a vehicle. You get in the vehicle, he would hand you the money. He would tell you first to count the money. He would tell you the amount while you counted it. If the amount was there, he would then bring out a card. On that card would be for the week of such and such. In other words, the week was dated. So-and-so has been paid the amount of. Then you would sign the card, and then the agent would sign the card. The reason for this is that if all of a sudden the IRS became very interested about where you were getting all this extra money from, you could always tell them to go back to the Bureau, and the Bureau would have your cards on file.
I see. Were there such things as bonuses?
Oh, yes.
What were they paid for?
Bonuses were paid for, suppose while you were meeting with, or you were at a meeting with Bobby Seals, Chulai of the Red Army happened to come to the meeting too, which is something which would be a new development. That's bonus time.
In other words, a hot piece of information.
Hot piece, very hot piece.
Did you ever suffer pangs of conscience?
Quite a few times. Quite a few times. I still suffer pangs of conscience. I suffer from the fact that a lot of people trusted me, and I misused that trust. I suffer from the fact that a lot of information that I gave out was the undoing of certain groups or certain people. I suffer from the fact that I'm on the run constantly. I have no real life to speak of.
You have no family life, really? You have a wife?
No, I don't have a wife. I do have a child. I can't see her that often. I have to stay away from them because once I come around, the Bureau shows up and harassment starts. I have very few close personal friends, no one to really confide in. It's like being on the outside of a glass jar and everything is happening inside the jar, but you're on the outside. You can see it happening, but you can't participate.
Why have you decided to talk to me?
For the simple reason, I think this information should be put out to the public. I think not only black people, but everyone should become aware of what your so-called law enforcement agencies do to so-called enforce the law. Because between you, myself, and the audience, I've seen more felons in law enforcement than I have in prison.
Many would say, well, look, you yourself just got through saying that the DLA was involved in criminal activity. What's wrong with wanting to put them in prison? How would you answer them?
I would answer them this way. First off, we have to understand why they did what they did. But I'm not even going to go off into that psychological hoo-ha. What I'm going to say is when you become just as bad as the people that you go after, then there's nothing gained and a whole lot lost.
Welcome back. Time for an awakening. Richard.
Yes.
You know, you hear this guy talking with Gil Noble, and he states that when Gil Noble asked him, does he have pains of consciousness for what he did or participated in? And he wasn't the only one. It was many of them that was just like him. He just decided to talk. He said he still suffered conscious bothering him because he knew that what he participated in was the undoing of groups or certain individuals. Now, that's cleaning it up when he says the undoing. But the reality is that resulted in the murder of individuals. So, you know, this type of stuff is real. And if they're reviving these programs to the point where, I mean, like I said, it's never ended. But if they put out, leak a report that they're reviving these activities, then our people know what they're in store for. We just have to understand. That's why there's a need for think tanks in these cities, Richard. And the time that's spent on Sundays, and I'm going to keep harping on it. I don't care if folks don't like it. The time that's spent on Sundays, Wednesday night, Saturday, Friday, screaming and hollering in these places of worship, be it Christian, Muslim, Hebrew, whatever, it need to be spent on some type of strategies, war strategies to move our people forward. Prayer is good, but the Almighty gives you a mind to use. According to the words of Frederick Douglass, he said he prayed for 20 years to be delivered out of bondage. And he didn't get his answer until he prayed with his feet. And that's what he said. And before he ran off that plantation, he beat the crap out of that slave master or plantation owner.
Yeah, it's something, you know, Elliot, as you were playing the clip and I was listening to it, you know, over the summer last year, picked up a novel that was called The Strivers' Roadside.
Wait a minute, say that again, Richard. You broke up slightly.
I say I picked up a novel called The Striver's Roast Spy by Jason Overstreet.
Okay.
And it's a historical thriller. And if I may, just to add on what you're saying and to show how long this process has been going on. I think what Brother Shabazz was saying, in the sense of not for us to put fear, but for us to become aware of.
Exactly.
And in this here, he says, Sidney Temple, which is the progenitor in his novel, a recent graduate of Middlebury College, class of 1919, is approached by the federal Bureau of Investigation, later to become the Federal Bureau of Investigation, to become its first American agent. He is interviewed and hired by the vivid described J. Edgar Hoover. His employment is to be kept secret, even from his wife, and his first assignment is to move to Harlem, open a business funded by the Bureau, and become a part of the community to identify socialists, communists, or anarchist groups operating in the neighborhood. But the true target of the investigation are civil rights advocate W.E.B. Du Bois and his NAACP organization, and Marcus Garvey, a promoter of Black nationalism and a Du Bois antagonist. The Bureau hides Sidney on the assumption that he is apolitical, but as an admirer of Mr. Du Bois, ideals his loyalty to the ideal of justice outweighs those to his employer, and he quickly finds himself acting as a double agent, passing sensitive information about Garvey to Du Bois. So, I thought that, you know, and going through it, but it shows that this process, and we can take it back even further, but this process, especially in the 20th century, by then calling it 2.0, we've been under surveillance for no other reason but trying to empower ourselves in a country that a lot of us claim that is ours. And all we're trying to deal with is the social, economic, health, educational, political issues that confront us. But that makes us enemies to the state. And so I think that, you know, as you say, this is, and, you know, Hoover lived a long time, because what you mentioned with the COINTELPRO program, that was still Hoover.
Yeah.
You know,
almost
so
50,
about from
what, 50 years later,
really, and four before on.
Yeah. And, you know, I knew about that agent that was recruited, that first Black agent, but I didn't really know the details of his existence. But, you know, you read about him being set up in business, mm-hmm. by the government and planted in the community. So he became a community member. Just like right. this guy that we just heard from in this video
right.
clip. He you know, developed trust from the people. And you do this, you know, and that's another thing that we have to consider too. Because if these people are going to be around, and you know he's going to use the same tactics he used against us in the past. Because white folks figure that you don't learn from any mistakes. And he can basically come at you the same way. He might change things a little bit differently, but he'll come at you the same way because he don't respect most Black folks' intelligence.
Mm.
I mean, so we really have to really consider what we need to do in reference to these people. I'm not advocating necessarily, especially on the air, hurting nobody. But somebody got to pay the price for doing this type of behavior, because those type of behaviors and tactics lead to people getting killed, and it has led to people getting killed, and it destroys people's lives. And then later on, the person just walks free, walks around. You know, I don't want to hear all this sour grapes, this guy's crying about he can't go visit his daughter and all that other bull crap. Because some of those people that's in the ground now, they ain't visiting nobody. At least he got a potential to visit his daughter.
Mm.
Go ahead. Yeah, I didn't mean to cut
across. I was just going to raise the point that it requires of us to have different types of social organizational relationships. Because it's important to realize, on another hand, there's people that don't even have to be hired that will do the job. And we have that history. And we use the history of who told on Denmark Vesey or Nat Turney. Those weren't people working for somebody. I mean, you know, consciously. And in our community, there's a lot of people who feel that that's their loyal duty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to inform, which they consider now, you know, especially when it's about somebody else. Because, you know, you're here now. There's this code, what's they call it? Snitches get stitches.
Yeah.
So we don't tell on things that destroy our community by us, but people outside, we have no problem in turning them.
Yeah, well, maybe that needs to be a philosophy that's adopted across the board instead of dealing with somebody ratting on somebody because they're destroying their community. They need stitches also, but that philosophy need to be across the board, because these people that work for these government agencies that turn people in, turn over information, expose what's going on in private meetings, maybe some stitches need to be delivered across the board and more. I'll just leave it like that. Because you can't go in other people's meetings and do that type of foolishness. I can't go in no Jewish meeting and divulge any private information. Number one, they ain't going to let me in the door. And number two, I ain't going to be able to recruit no Jewish guy to go in there and tell me no information. Or any other nationality for that matter. You see what I'm saying, Richard?
Oh, yeah.
You ain't going to get no other nationality to do that type of foolishness against their own people. But in certain segments of our community, you got people lined up to carry out this behavior because of a dollar.
Yeah. It's something to be aware of and something to be conscious of as you try to solve the problems of our community. And in this generation, so that we, as we move forward, in order to create a community that a just society, because that's all we want, right? In the end, we just want a just society, but you have to do that within yourself first.
Yeah, but that's in direct opposition to the people that we live with, and right, when I say live exactly. with in this country, because they establish an unjust society from the beginning. And they want it to stay that way. So when you are striving for a just society and you got people that always had an unjust society, then you're diametrically opposed to the system that we live under. So it's two things that got to happen. It's either that system got to be destroyed or you got to go somewhere else and do something else. And I think that both things is in play here, in my opinion. Because I don't know whether you're going to get all black people to try to look to establish things elsewhere. In fact, I don't think you need to get all black people to look to try to establish things elsewhere. But this unjust system that we live under needs to be dismantled. And when you talk about revolution, that don't necessarily mean any type of armed conflict necessarily. Revolutions mean drastic change.
That's why I think, you know, I understand the point, but a lot of times that what I see is that once we build the type of relationships, and I only say relationships because it seems simple to me. I don't know if it's really more complex. Maybe the listening audience can help us out or help me out with that. But it's the type of relationships we have to have. Because if we create this type of relationships that service ourselves, then we put the defensive mechanisms within that. And we build, that's why you kind of hear me all the time raising this question about infrastructure and policy, because it, recognizing our community probably is the most, as far as quote unquote African-American, is probably the most diverse community of people anywhere. Because, you know, we have different interests, but we were labeled under the same. And we have to kind of work that out to where we have a place where we can sit down, explore our differences, and come up with a unified policy. I call it policy, which is a law that we all will agree on to implement in our different areas, which to me is diversity amongst unity. But the challenge is when we've tried to do that, and we've done it because we have had cooperatives and we've had coalitions. We haven't had a strong enough defense mechanism to where an outside force, whether they put plants in or not, can be able to not be able to held. They can't be held at bay, because if they're held at bay, then we can grow. And if we can grow, my not saying that it's not going to be a struggle, fight, or the continuation of a war, but at least we'll be centered from our own position compared to trying to destroy something else, and being clear of what we're trying to build out, what we're trying to make, what our future will look like. I think that's that for us is our revolution, is our change. And then once we do that and we do it effectively, then as Brother Shabazz says, and as you're saying, this thing will fall. Because this thing is unjust, and it was built, and it continues to be built off of the blacks of the history of African black people. And we see that, and we see it every 4 years. And Trump utilized that system was built when he won. He didn't win by no Democratic populist vote. He won by, what is that, electoral college vote. And that system that they built, that electoral college system, was built off of the backs of dealing with what do we do with this they call non-human people, with one side saying, y'all got more people than we do because we got this thing called enslaved Africans and they don't count. And that's when the electoral college comes into being every 4 years.
Richard, listen, we'll take a minute because I want to catch up on a couple commercials. We'll take another break, and when we come back, we're still in open forum. The phone lines is open, 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. If you want to call in and challenge some of the things Brother Richard is saying, or either just get involved in the conversation. We'll keep things going for a little while longer. Then we'll start winding things down if we don't get some folks to call in. Yeah, we'll take a brief break, Richard. We'll come back and we'll continue the discussion. Again, we're in open forum the rest of the way. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
New age is upon us, and yet the past refuses to rest in its shallow grave. For those who hide behind the false image of the Son of Man shall stand before God, God, God.
Voice of racism preaching the gospel is devilish. A fake church called the Prophet Muhammad a terrorist. Forgetting God is not religion, but a spiritual bond. And Jesus is the most quoted prophet in the Quran. They bombed innocent people trying to murder Saddam. When you gave them those chemical weapons to go to war with Iran. This is the information that they hold back from Peter Jennings. Cause Condoleezza Rice is just a new age Sally Hemings. I break it down with critical language and spiritual anguish. The Judas I hang with. The guilt of betraying Christ, who murdered him, stole his religion, and painted him white. Translated in psychologically tainted philosophy, conservative political right-wing ideology, glued together sloppily, the blasphemy of a nation. Got my back to the wall, cause I'm facing assassination. Guantanamo Bay, federal incarceration. How could this be? The land of the free, home of the brave, indigenous Holocaust, and the home of the slaves. Corporate America, dancing offbeat to the rhythm. You really think this country never sponsored terrorism? Human rights violations, we continue the saga. El Salvador and the Contras and Nicaragua. And on top of that, you still want to take me to prison just because I won't trade humanity for patriotism. It's like MK Ultra controlling your brain, suggestive thinking, causing your perspective to change. They want to rearrange the whole point of view of the ghetto. The fourth branch of the government wants us to settle. A bandana full of glittering generality, fighting for freedom and fighting terror. but what's reality? Read about the history of the place that we live in and stop letting corporate news tell lies to your children. Flow like the blood of Abraham through the Jews and the Arabs, broken apart like a woman's heart, abused in the marriage, the brink of holy war, bottled up like a miscarriage. Embedded correspondents don't tell the source of the tension, and they refuse to even mention European intervention or the massacres in Jenin, the innocent screams, U.S. manufactured missiles and M16s, weapon contracts and corrupted American dreams, media censorship blocking out the video screens, a continent of oil kingdoms bought for a bargain. Democracy is just a word when the people are starving, the average citizen made to be blind to the reason, a desert full of genocide where the bodies are freezing, and the world doesn't believe that you're fighting for freedom, cause you fucked the Middle East and gave birth to a demon. It's open season with the CIA bugging my crib, trapped in a ghetto region like a Palestinian kid, where nobody gives a fuck whether you die or you live. I'm trying to give the truth and I know the price is my life, but when I'm gone they'll sing a song about immortal technique, who beheaded the president and the princes and sheiks. You don't give a fuck about us, I can see through your facade like a fallen angel standing in the presence of God. Bitch niggas scared of the truth when it looks at you hard. It's like MK Ultra controlling your brain, suggestive thinking causing your perspective to change. They want to rearrange the whole point of view in a ghetto. The fourth branch of the government want us to settle, a bandana full of glittering generality, fighting for freedom and fighting terror. But what's reality? Martial law is coming soon to the hood to kill yo, while you hanging your flag out your project window. Yeah.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And Brother Richard.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, you know, I wish you would hear. I mean, I'm not a big hip-hop fan, but I wish you would hear more of that instead of this crap that they push out there so our children can get a steady diet of that foolishness instead of hearing things with lyrics that make sense.
Immortal Technique is one of my favorite artists because of what he's able to put together. So, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. We need, you know, lyricists in this time to be able to, you know, to be able to blend that political and musical genius to be able to be communication, another communication information outlet for our young people, since that's what they want to listen to. But like you said, it's not it's overwhelmed with that other stuff that the music industry deliberately promotes to fade out those kind of lyricists.
I guess we got a little bit more time left. You want? How's your time, Richard?
Bad. I'm with you.
Let's go to let's take a call. 773 area code.
You got me, brother.
Hey, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing without.
All right.
What about a reality check for the well educated, the well being, and the sheep? You asked me a while back to look up Millikan's Bend.
Mm-hmm.
And I did look that up, but even before I looked it up, I already figured it was about some black people who fighting with white people to preserve slavery when they thought they was fighting against slavery. I mean, that's what it was, wasn't it?
No, not necessarily.
Okay, well, the black people who was fighting, they didn't gain their freedom, did they?
Well, that whole incident, they were fighting for their lives. I'm quite sure those ancestors that was fighting, they wasn't concerned about fighting for the United States or freedom because they didn't have any weapons. All they had was bayonets. Those white boys had guns. They had weapons.
I know, but after it was over, they were still in the same position.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about the fact of what – okay, Go ahead, brother.
All right, no, I'm asking you. That's what I gathered.
Okay. No problem.
Okay, let me move on with this.
Mm-hmm.
Let me make this plain again. The Great White Father have plans to exterminate us as a people, as they have done to other non-Caucasians for over 2,500 years. I suggest if anybody's able, have the wherewithal to get out of here, to get their children, their grandchildren out of here, get them out of here. Now, when I say that, let me make this plain. That's not for everybody. That's a suggestion for people who are not ready to fight the greatest killer on earth in his homeland. And what would you be fighting for? You have no country. You have no land. What would you be fighting for? Now, Sonika down the street got four children. They from 6 months to 10 years old. Sonika is not ready to go to battle with these psychopaths running for her life in the woods. Because you're not going to sit in your house if you think that's what it's going to be. Because if they can find you, they can kill you. Now, you remember that when this started. If they can find you, they can kill you. They just dropped a 20-ton bomb over there in Afghanistan about a month ago. These psychopaths know how to kill you. And the only reason Afghanistan has been able to stand up, because they can't find them. The only reason Vietnam was able to fight them, they couldn't find them in that jungle. So when it started here, if you going to stay here and fight them, you better get on the run. Refugees ain't nothing new. They've been here since past Caesar. There's always people going to run for their life. And there's always some people who going to stay and fight. I had a brother tell me, he tell me this all the time. Man, I'm going to fight for my country. I said, man, where your country at? Right here. Oh, this your country? This your country where you was brought and enslaved, has no rights that whites are bound to respect, burning your towns, taking all your inventions, shooting your men, women, and children down on camera, and the police go home, watch baseball, drink beer. This your country? This the country you're going to be fighting for? Okay, brother. I tell him, I got a cousin, he said he's ready to fight. He's never been in the military. He got a .38 pistol and about 6 boxes of shells. He's ready for a war against the Great White Father. All I can do is just smile at him. And he think he's going to sit in his house and shoot at them out the window when this stuff starts. He don't know he got to run for his life, and he'll be lucky if he make it to some woods. So people out there, you think about that. I'm not telling everybody to leave. Scotty down there in North Carolina, he's going to stay and fight? Fine. But Sonika, with them four little children, is she ready to fight these psychopaths? Is our elderly people in these nursing homes and these hospitals, is they ready to fight these psychopaths for their life? Is all these children ready to fight them? So anybody out there who's ready to fight them and you fighting for your country, you stay here and do that.
Hey, Brother X, so are we the only ones with elderly people? Are we the only ones with women with four children?
No, sir.
Okay.
But we're going to be only ones that they out to exterminate. They're not going to be out to exterminate Caucasians.
I didn't know
that's
that.
Gonna be the difference.
I didn't know that the way you fight somebody is to run to the woods.
Well, you run to the woods for cover.
Okay.
I was in Vietnam. That's where I learned that from.
Yeah, well, most people run to the woods for cover and develop a strategy where they can fight back.
Well,
just running to be running, that's coward. That's a coward.
Okay, what the people in Rosewood?
And I don't
think
none of our ancestors were cowards.
Well, man,
remember that. That's why I told you to read that Battle of Milligan's Bend. That ain't had nothing to do with nobody being a slave afterwards and all that old bullshit. I'm talking about the courage. I'm talking about the courage of our ancestors. Ain't nobody running no goddamn woods. If you want to run to the woods, run to the woods. But some people is going to fight for the dignity of their people. I ain't give a damn about no flag in the United States. The hell with that bullshit. You heard what that guy just said in that record. I'm talking about fighting for our dignity and respect of our people. Now, if your way of fighting for dignity and respect is running in the woods, have at it. Run to the woods. Run to Yellowstone. Run to Redwood National Forest. That's some of the biggest trees in the world. Run there. Maybe somebody else will do some fighting. You done already responded, Brother X. I done heard it before. Okay, I done heard it before.
May I make one last comment, my brother?
Go ahead. And Brother Richard, you got something to say on this issue?
Oklahoma had a town with over 600 businesses. They ran to the woods. Running to the woods is not running away. Even if you're going to fight them, you need cover. You cannot be in a physical structure.
Oh, I don't mind running to say where to get some cover and then fight back. You talking about running to the woods and just running. That's what you're talking about because of the great white father. He ain't my father. Maybe he's your father. Maybe he's your father.
You want to fight?
Maybe he's your father. He ain't my father. He ain't my father.
Brother, I said that when I started. I said,
Sonika to him. I ain't talking about no Sonika. Sonika be ready to fight. You the one that want to run in the woods.
All right. But look, every black town that these people had burned down and killed our people, the black people who saved their lives, they had to run. They ran in Rosewood. They ran in Tulsa. They ran in Wilmington. They ran in Slocum.
Yeah, well,
Texas.
Sometimes it come a time when you ain't running no more.
That's why I offer the, you know, one thing that Brother X, you know, every time, because I always look at it if we are sitting at the table, and this is pre-planning, especially when we're talking about historical military analysis and what you raise and the examples you give, that's what we need to consider. So one is that, you know, and that's what I was saying earlier, Elliot, in relationship to, you know, learning and having a different social organizational relationship. And two, the question that came to my mind as you raised the point, Brother X, is that then the question is for Shanika, for the elderly, shouldn't we have in place for or for those who do not want to fight? Shouldn't we
Where
have
is your
place?
Land? Where wait, is wait, your wait, country?
Wait a minute. Because I'm raising a question because your initial point is that we should run, those of us who don't. Who can't fight, and in order to protect our lives, we should go somewhere, which because we don't have no land, and because we don't have a country. So, and I accept that premise. So, the question I'm raising is, from a pre-planning perspective, shouldn't we also have for those people of our people showing concern, recognizing what's coming? Shouldn't we have a mechanism to assist them in that, which they didn't have in Rosewood, they didn't have in Wilmington, they didn't have a mechanism. They ran because they were reacting. Mm-hmm. Got that? That's what history shows us.
Mm-hmm.
So now, knowing what history shows us, so should we be putting in place and taking the
Wait a minute. Say that again, Richard, because your audio is choppy. Richard, yes. Say that again, because your audio is getting choppy.
I said since we take that, you know, take your position, you know, one that we look at what history has told us, and fortify a better social relationship, and two, taking mind what you're telling us is a possibility. And then putting in place for those people, because then that's showing us that we have concern, not just telling them they need to be ready, which we are telling them they need to be ready, but shouldn't we also have a way to be able to assist them to go to this place, whether it's anywhere they want to go or some place that we designate that is safe for them to go? But for just to tell them they need to go, is that being responsible or even showing that we care about them? That's my question.
I didn't tell them they need to go. That was right.
I'm just saying for the ones who want to go, should we have that in place so that they can be able to have assistance to get to where they want to go?
Okay, let me answer this. You can't have it like you said because this is not our land. That's why they burned down Rosewood, Tulsa, Wilmington, Slocum. They are not going to allow us to build nothing here where we can call our own and protect ourselves and have an army. The white supremacy. May I answer you, please?
So you're giving me an answer, but you're not addressing the proposition I'm posing.
Well, I said they're not going
to
allow that.
I'm not saying to fight against. I'm saying for the people that you're speaking about. I mean, and agreeing with you're saying, because you're saying right now you're warning us this is going to happen. And in warning us, I'm just asking, should for those people, that might not be everybody, but for those people, shouldn't we have assistance to be able to assist them? That's not an army. That's providing support.
Should we have to assist the people who want to
provide no support for that? We can't put in place no support. Everybody will be reacting. Is that
you mean? You mean should we have something in place to assist the people who want to leave?
Yes.
Or to assist the people who want to fight?
No, assist the people who want to leave.
Well, I can't put nothing in place to assist the people who want to leave.
Well, then you're not part of the solution. You're not part of the solution, and you're part of the problem. Then you're not part of the solution.
Nobody's going to take 20 million, 10 million, 5 million black people. We will be scattered all over the world, just like we're scattered now.
Yeah, well, you're not part of the solution, brother. Actually, you're part of the problem.
Well,
because
I
if you're not intelligent enough, you ain't offering no solution. You offering some reaction. Somebody just get up and start running.
They ain't been in no military.
They
don't know nothing about fighting nobody. That's why I'm letting them know when this stuff go down, you're not going to sit in your house and fight Billy Bob. Because if he can find you, he can kill you. You have to have strategy to be on the run. And a lot of them don't realize that.
Yeah, okay, but. Thanks for your call, brother.
I'm telling them, brother. I'm not telling them to do that. You have a farm.
You ain't
here.
Telling them nothing to do besides run in the woods.
That's
do you realize that? You ain't telling them. And hold it. And hold it. I want you to understand something. That you changed your argument a little bit after you got spanked a couple times by saying it on this program. Because this time you said if somebody want to fight, let them fight. But other people run in the woods. Before when you was bringing this up, you was talking about everybody run to the woods. So I'm glad that you're starting to see.
I never said that. I was offering suggestion to people who want a chance to save their life and their young children and grandchildren life.
Okay.
That's what I always have done.
Okay.
I never suggested this to everybody. I always said anybody want to stay and fight the psychopath for a country that they
nobody talking about. Why you keep talking about for a country and why you keep talking about for a country and all that other stuff? Where you getting all that? Who's saying that? Besides you, who's saying that? Fight for a country.
Brother.
Who is saying that? No. Hey, hold up. Who is saying that? Answer this question.
History.
Come on, man. All right.
I'm
talking about you keep talking about somebody fighting for a country. Who is saying that? And who has ever said that on this program? If you heard it somewhere else, then address it somewhere else. You ain't heard nobody on this station talking about some fighting for a country. Besides you.
I have heard people saying they're going to stay and fight. But Scotty says it.
Well, then address it with Scotty then. And I doubt if Scotty said anything about fighting for a country.
Well, he said he's staying and fighting. He ain't going nowhere. So he's fighting for his land.
Brother X, the only challenge
I have. I ain't got no problem with that. But I'm trying to offer a suggestion to people who not into this fighting the psychopath for this country.
And I accept that. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm trying because, you know, the part that puzzles me in trying to just continue to take your premise as a base premise. I don't have no problem with that. But you're saying that even though we know, and I'm accepting your premise, we know this is going to happen. We know it now.
No, we don't know. That's what I think.
We don't know when it's going to happen. You're saying it's going to happen.
Yeah, that's my opinion.
Okay, I got that. It's going to happen. But we know now it's going to happen. The challenge I'm having and what you're saying is in knowing now it's going to happen, you also know now there is some people who will not fight, who are not prepared to fight, and they should go somewhere. The challenge I'm having is you also are saying that we who are concerned about them, I accept that I'm assuming that you're concerned about those because you're raising this point. You're concerned about those who can't protect themselves, who don't want to fight, and you're letting them know to go somewhere. I have a challenge when you're saying at the same time that we can't put nothing in place to assist those people. Not deal with who we, the avids wanting to fight, but just to assist those elderly people, or to assist those mothers with children, that we who know today and don't know the hour when this is going to happen, that we shouldn't be putting in place today. So things like what happened in Rosewood and Wilmington and on that we have historical examples of will not happen. That we shouldn't put anything in place because, and that's part where I get lost at. I'm not sure why.
Okay, well, then Rosewood and Tulsa and Slocum and Wilmington, did they try to put in place what you just said?
No, that's the point. And that's
they didn't.
That's why history tells us, I mean, as you're a given example, no. And when it happened, they didn't even know it was going to happen.
Did the Black Panthers try to put that in place? As you said, they had to run.
But at this point, with that history, our ancestral history, and that understanding, you're saying today that we shouldn't have something in place for those, not the ones who want to fight, who whether they claim something or even a reason why, but for those who want don't want to, don't we have a moral obligation to those elderly people, those mothers with children, to assist them?
It will not be done here, my brother, and this white
supremacy. I mean, it's got to be done here. This is where you're saying that they're going to be.
Let me tell you what you have to have in place. You would have to have land. You would have to have a military.
You would have to have a place to go.
They're not going to allow that here. That's why they rubbed out the Black Panthers. They're not going to allow us to put no army together. I'm talking about a relief.
I mean, maybe it's considered an army, but it could just be considered, even if it's a conceptual framework, as you said. Nobody tells, as we had Brother Zulu Shabazz on, he was saying he's just putting out what people should do. We can assemble. So the word going out, this is where you can go. You can give a list of one place. You can give a list of 20 places. You can give a list of 100 places. And when they start moving, they will be considered refugees. But at least don't we have the moral responsibility, knowing that this is going to happen, as you said, to let them know where they're going to go? And if we know where they're going to go, to let them know what kind of supplies, because they have no country, because they have no land, what kind of supplies they will need to take with them. And if it's possible to be able to provide those supplies, so when they do have to leave, that they'll know that the things that they'll need to go with them, they'll know where to go get it, and they'll also know where to go. Do we have that moral responsibility now in history?
No, we don't.
Okay. All right, good.
What I have is Brother X, a chance to warn people that if they want to save their life, they have to get out of here.
Yeah. Brother X, listen, we'll talk to you next week.
We'll talk to you next week.
You don't have the moral responsibility to look out for elderly and women with children. You don't have that moral responsibility. Now, I'll have to talk to you.
I'm not able to do that.
Okay,
and
okay.
Ain't nobody else in this country able to do it.
Okay, all right. Thanks for your call, brother.
With them.
All right.
I'm not going to fool these people.
Thanks for your call, brother.
50 states.
Yeah, all right.
50 states,
I ain't talking about no 50 states. Just deal with your block. Wait a minute. You just mentioned Shaniqua on your block, didn't you? Well, deal with your block. Don't talk about no 50. Don't try to change the conversation talking about some damn 50 states. Deal with your block.
No.
Oh, okay, well, good. You can't protect her? Good.
Thank you for your call, Brother X.
I'll talk to you next week.
I can't protect the house.
Talk to you next week.
I'm going to protect the block.
Talk to you next week.
If you're going to fight these psychopaths, you...
Let's go back to caller.
Hey, what's up, Brother Elliot?
Hey, sir.
This is Ramon again. I'm trying to follow Brother X there. I hear where he's trying to come from. I don't agree. I first want to put that out there. I don't think I have the right to speak for Scotty, but I'm going to say it because I'm an avid fan of Scotty's and Max. And I listen to their stations and podcasts every day. There ain't nowhere he going to find that. Scotty said he going to stand up and fight for America.
Oh, I know he didn't. I know he didn't. And I ain't even, you know, yeah. Come on.
Scotty has never said that. So I just, that's what Brother Shabazz just said on your show. We're going to have to stand up and start holding our own selves accountable. That's a perfect example right there. You know, he can't be putting words in people's mouth that they didn't actually say, especially when Scotty got much material he can go back and listen to confirm that. But what I wanted to say is Shaniqua is just as much of a militant fighter as anybody else. I mean, the ones I know of, they don't tend to run. Matter of fact, they're first to get out there and kick off their shoes and get to fighting. So I think his focus may not be looking at the use of how we ain't going to be able to push. We can't tell people to run somewhere else to a destination. They have no clue where the destination is. And let's just be honest. Richard said it earlier. This is stuff we've been talking about. Who going to build the houses? Who going to build the plumbing? Who's going to install the electric? Who's going to raise crops and stuff? I mean, some of this stuff, we just got to look at it for what it is, man. You in a time where you at, you got to deal with it right then and there. You have no options to be talking about running across the seas and the oceans to go talk to people who probably really don't want to talk to you. And one thing else I want to talk about and say this. This is why it's so important, and I love this show for that reason, to get some lineage about yourself. Digging up mine, and I hear Tulsa, Oklahoma brought up so much on every show. Y'all must have forgot about them other 12 black cities that was settled in Oklahoma, where that blueprint for Tulsa, Oklahoma came from. If you search the history of those places, you will find them people as y'all are talking, they threw sticks, rocks, set gas fires, everything you can think of to fight back.
Mm-hmm.
They wasn't into no talking about running.
Running to the woods.
They understood. Yeah, they wasn't even running. They made it very clear. If we're going to die, we got to die where we're at. You know, and this is the history that is not being Brother Braggs talks about this a lot on Tando Show. There is history that needs to be pulled up so people can get some courage, get some heart, and get some type of focus on what they want to do. Because all I'm still hearing, myself guilty from time to time, is a lot of loose-lip running.
Well, that's why I mentioned to him when he was on about a month ago to check out that Battle of Milligan's Bend. And
I read it myself.
Well, yeah, wait a minute. Now, he talking about, oh, they were slaves. See, I wasn't even dealing with that part of it. If you remember that account, it said that when that fort was surrounded, that the white soldiers that was there ran in the woods. They ran off.
They sure did.
The black soldiers didn't even have access to the guns. The only thing that they had was bayonets. And they had empty guns. They could fix them to a gun, but they didn't have no bullets. And they had to fight. It wasn't about them fighting for the United States or nothing. They was fighting for their life where they were. They could have tried to run in the woods like the white boys did. But they didn't. They did. That's what the point I wanted to get him to see, but evidently he read it and didn't see anything from it, so it wasn't no problem.
Well, like again, I'm going to say, I'm going to encourage everybody, if you want to see some of historical fighting taking place on as they call it, guerrilla warfare, Oklahoma is a great place to go read into the OU archives and see what really took place. They, you know, this propaganda, this mainstream media has got us all off our block. That's why when Brother X even says fighting for our country, that right there in itself causes distraction. Because most people that's aware, they understand, man, we are not countrymen. And we need to understand that. That's where he missed the point. Scotty said, but he's broadcasting behind enemy lines as a prisoner of war. We're very well understanding. We're not standing on what we want to call our birthright land. But if you check the history, and this is where I do put my opposition to if we may have or may not come from Africa, there's too much evidence that actually says a good portion of us originated right off this soil. So why is it the right for somebody to say we should go run back to Mother Africa? If anything, you should have solidarity with them And here's another thing I would want him to think about. When you think of a military, this is the problem with black people. We're sold on symbolism. If you don't see camouflages and people marching, you don't think of a military. That is the first, that is the greatest deception. Because most of these militant white folk that run around here every day like little teachers, and let's not forget about the old white woman who loves to poison you by porridge. She'll invite you into the house, pretend she wants to help out, and feed you porridge. Next thing you know, you're dead. See, this is the type of behavior we don't understand. That's a militant mind. She's in tune, but yet she don't have on an outfit. She ain't running around here with a gun on. She looked like a grandmother. And we don't see that as military tactics. And that's what Brother X got to understand. Some of us just recognize through the fact that war has no rules. And to run just means you're going to be on the run continuously. Thank you, and I appreciate it. Hey,
thanks, brother. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, good evening. It's Brother Marcus calling from Memphis.
Hey, Brother Marcus.
Hey, what's up, brother?
Let me ask you, brother, a question. How you kill a snake? What's the easiest way to kill a snake?
Don't ask me. Now, come on. You know, ain't no snakes in Philadelphia.
Yeah, but what's the easiest way to kill a snake? What's the easiest way to kill a snake?
I guess you cut off his head if you can get it.
Okay, so, all right, so you answered the question. Now, look, there is no solution for black people in America. 400 years is long enough to know if there was any human relationship to be worked out with black people and white people. Don't you think we could have done it in 400 years? Really?
Oh, yeah, I agree.
So these people have no intention of working out any compatible relationship with us other people here in the United States of America that they took from the red man. No, the red man is not dead, you know. I have lived in all across this country. And they are still very much alive. And they want their country back. You know, they want their country back too now. Now, by us laying claim to America, we are saying that we are depriving the red man of his legacy and turning our back on our birthright. Our 12 million square miles of land that is a million times richer than this place here in America that, you know, we suffer so much. I agree, you know, we suffer a lot in America and a lot of people attached to America and say, look, you know, we died here, we ain't going. Nobody said you give up America because Marcus Garvey said it's Africa for the Africans, those at home and those abroad. Now, the brother Richard said, making provisions for our people. If we pick up where Mr. Garvey left off and acquire those ships, where he got railroaded, because that was really when they attacked him, and when he went and started moving to get those ships, they said, hell no, we're not going to make, because once you get the ships, you start, you can move goods and people. We need to pick up where Mr. Garvey left off. Everybody came behind us and followed Garvey program and moved to freedom, except black people. And world status shall only be restored to us when we rejoin ourselves with the mass majority of our people in Africa. America is not, we need to save Africa. That is the solution to black people. It's Africa. Because if we even save America and lose Africa, we lose. We lose. It's Africa is the prize. It's not this place. This place came and stole this place. And right now, the whole thing is, as you say, it's a house of cards. It's collapsing. We see it collapsing in front of our face. We see he trying to hold it together. So now is our time to make our move. We're going to have to fight. We know that. We know we're going to have to fight. But if we start to make our move out of this place, and then you say, oh, you ain't going nowhere, then we're going to be forced to fight. You see? If he said no, you, then we're going to be forced. But as the opportunity allies itself now, the door is open. Okay? You know, a lot of people say, well, I ain't going nothing about Africa. You know, you didn't know nothing about America either when he took us from the continent and brought us here. We ain't know nothing. We ain't know where the hell we was going. But our people came and we survived. We are still here. We ain't dead. Okay? And we are his problem. I asked the old nationalist. I said, who is America's problem? He looked at me and said, you are America's problem. You know? And it's true. We are America's problem. You see? So we need to go rejoin the mass majority of our people on the continent and go recoup. And then we come back and deal with him. Okay? But right now, as it is, it's too much confusion here. We are totally disorganized. We are totally dependent on this man for everything. The food we eat, the clothes we wear, the houses we live in, the educational system. If you even go to the damn doctor, you don't even know. So much people get diagnosed now with cancer. They say, oh, you don't know. You go to the doctor, he say, oh, you know what, Elliot, you got cancer. Do you know? I got to give you some therapy. And what I realize now, so many black women coming down with cancer, and they go in there, and in the span of a year, they're dead. They're dead in a year because they're giving us radiation, killing us. So, look, we may not agree with Brother X to some point, you know what I say, you know. But he ain't saying, you know, sometimes you have to, when they say he who fights and run away, live to fight another day. You see? So, you know, we got to slowly, if you're handing the lion's mouth, you take time and pull it out. Because right now, this white man, he's at a point where, look, he really, it's like, he knows he's dying, you know. He's on his journey to death. But he gonna try to take as much people with him on his journey as possible. And that's what's going on right now. Cause he know he died. He see it on the wall. He's a dying tiger. But the dying tiger is the most dangerous animal in the jungle. Because he say, you know what, I'm dying, but I'm gonna take everybody with me. So we need to really consider Mr. Garvey's program. You know, it's not about running. You know, it's about saving ourselves because our people ain't stupid. And as I say again, it's Africa for the African, those at home and those abroad. We who repatriate back to Africa, we still do business with our people here. You be our eyes and ears here in America, and we'll be your eyes and ears here in Africa. Because the white man in Africa too know. So when he strike here, we strike there. You see? So look, if Africa is the prize, it's not this place. 400 years is long enough to know he ain't gonna work out no relationship, no human relationship with us. Where, you know, and I told you, I had a friend, he'd been going back and forth to Africa. And the FBI came to him one day and said, you know, we see you going back and forth to Africa. We think you owe us $250,000 in taxes. He said, man, to hell with you. You know what one of the French FBI agents came? He said, look, you ain't going to build no black empire here in America. That's what the man said to him. You ain't going to build no black empire here. See? And history has demonstrated that in Rosewood, all those places, every time we try to make a move, he destroy us. So we need to go rejoin and go build that empire for himself, an empire so great and so powerful that and get some revenge and that nobody will ever even think about putting us in enslavement again. Because remember, The African has no friends outside of the race. And at this point now in history, we have very few friends within. You take care, good brothers.
Thank you for your call, Brother Marcus. Let's go to 646.
Good brothers, how are y'all this evening?
Well, Jay Richard was a little upset there, but he calmed down.
Yes, I heard him so hard on my good brother, Brother X, man. Why do y'all treat the great Brother X so harsh? The brother is only trying to warn our people that we must get out of here before the white man just make us extinct. Oh, that Brother X is a good brother, man. Y'all have to be a little more compassionate to the plight of Brother X, man. He's doing a service to black people. You know, you have a lot of Negroes in this country who don't believe in what Brother X is saying. You know, they live a life of thinking that the daddy is gonna, you know, basically treat him well always. You know, but Brother X know that the daddy ain't gonna treat him right. You know, remember how Brother Richard was feeling on Friday? The daddy had him down.
He had to go there, right?
The daddy had him really down. You know, you got to think about that next time you listen to Brother X. After the way the daddy had you Friday, man. You know? Oh, that's not right, brother. But no, in all seriousness, man, I just wanted to say, you know, I was listening to a program earlier today, and they were talking about, you know, the nature and the mindset of the Negro. And they was talking about the governor over there in the Virgin Islands. You know, they're really not talking about the type of destruction that is going on over there in the Virgin Islands, which is
as bad as
Puerto Rico, and if not worse. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, that Negro over there in the Virgin Islands is praising Daddy Trump, it seems. You know, he's not, you know, letting the truth be told about how America isn't really doing the necessary things that they need to do to address the plight of the people. Now, you know, it's absolutely sad to see what is happening over in Puerto Rico in a certain sense. But if you really look at it, what's happening over in the Virgin Islands in the places next to it is just as bad, and if not worse. You know, at least something is being said about Puerto Rico, but ain't nothing being said about the Virgin Islands. You know, and it just goes to show where we as a people are just so totally divided, and how there's always that Negro who always will come to the defense of the daddy and say that the daddy is doing the best he can by it, just like in slavery. And for some reason, we never put any pushback against him. And that's the tragedy of our situation. But you know, the one thing about it is, I think that that these Puerto Ricans, they're gonna make somebody pay the piper in a sense, man, because they're a little more vocal. You know what I mean? But you know, the thing is this also, white folks in the coming months are gonna start to have some real suffering with what this wingnut has done over the last couple of days with his constant attack on whatever Obama has done that he needs to repeal. It's like Obama is his ghost for some reason. I don't understand how a white man could allow a black man to just do what Obama has done to Trump. You know what I mean? It's like this man can function none whatsoever in regards to Obama at all. Everything that Obama has done it seems that he has this excessive need to change it, to appeal it, to make it seem as though it wasn't good for the country or anything at all. And in the process, unfortunately, I think he's going to really hurt his brethren on a real serious level, because these white folks are about to catch hell with what he's just done medically. And they don't even understand it, man. Oh, it's gonna be catastrophic if you really, really analyze it and you really think about it. And I don't even think they have a real clue, honestly.
Yeah, well,
I don't think they do.
You got a point, Jay. You got a point.
I mean, it just seems as though they're oblivious to what's about to go down. I mean, economically and everything. You know, and I mean, they were talking about how even, you know, the stocks of these pharmaceutical companies and other companies have even diminished. So over the last couple of months. So, you know, it's just no telling what's gonna happen. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't know what to say, man. I really don't know what direction we're going to go forward. I don't even know what's going to happen in regards to this wing nut with North Korea. I don't. The more and more you listen and you see the whole thing with Russia is going to come to a head soon. You got everybody, it seems, around the world is seeing this character as nothing more than a raving jokester. You know what I mean? Our place on the world stage, it seems, is diminishing. He's been in office for close to 11 months, and he hasn't achieved anything other than repealing the things that Obama has done. I mean, it's really, when you look at it and you think about it, you know, a nation is supposed to be moving forward, but it don't seem like we as a nation is moving forward at all. I think we're moving backwards with this jokester in office. Where's the direction of the country going? He's not bringing jobs back. It seems as though anything that they're talking about on a serious level is about robotic automation. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
So, you know, all I could say is, look, it was a fantastic show, as always, and it shows you that the direction that it's going that makes it even more beautiful is, how the hell do you get your ass whipped and you get arrested and accused of whipping somebody else's ass, but you took the beat? I really want to figure that one out myself, but that's deep if you think about it. Now, the black man's going to be found convicted, I guarantee you, and the white man is not going to be found convicted. I'm willing to bet some money on that, and I'm a betting, you know, I'm a betting man. I guarantee it.
Well, we'll see what's going to happen, because Brother Shabazz is down there representing the brother that...
He's representing one of them, but the other one. There's another one.
Yes,
He's not representing the one that got his ass whipped. That's the one that, well, I think,
no,
is going to get convicted.
No, he's representing the one that got shot at. Yeah.
Right. You know what I mean? Now, you know, that's going to be what's funny. The one that got shot at. What charges are they bringing up on him for getting shot at? How is the justification of him getting shot at is the reason for him bringing up on any charges? And how many of them have they brought up on charges? I mean, it just becomes more and more amazing as you just look at it. So now we'll speak again on Friday. So from now until Friday, it's no telling what could happen between these next 5 days in this country.
Yeah, well,
the thing is,
something's going to happen though. We don't know what or when.
The nutball is gonna say something. He's gonna tweet something, or he's gonna do something. And then they're going to look for some sort of justification of it. But, you know, I guess it's kind of interesting to whereas the methodicalness of the investigation of this Russian thing, which I honestly, and I'm going to have to say this, I find to be one of the biggest jokes in the world, because we do the same thing all around the world. That's what I hate about this whole thing is, how can we be so moral about what we do all around the world being done to us? I think it's supposed to be done to us. But are we not supposed to have done to us what we do to others? We're supposed to be above that. You know what I'm saying? How could you be above something that you do at will? You know what I mean? That don't sound right to me. That don't sound fair to me. That don't, you know, you say you at war and you doing your thing, you trying to protect the interests of your nation, then why can't other nations be about protecting the interests of their nation and moving forward their nation agenda? You the only one that's supposed to be able to do this? And then, you know, you put forward the narrative that we were wrong. But what do you call it when you do it, right?
Yeah, well,
but you notice nobody says anything about that. But, you know, you justify it. I don't understand that. But nobody never discusses it. But they say that, you know, it's crazy. You know, it's wrong. It shouldn't have been done to us. Now, is that logical to you, or am I missing something?
Well, listen, the narrative about what this country is doing, I always term it as they. I don't necessarily term it as we. And that's another thing that we have to start disassociating ourselves from the deeds of this country. And heretofore, a lot of our people, or at least publicly, we've kind of went along for the go along. I think Richard mentioned that Friday about us starting to develop a voice where if we don't agree with these things, it needs to be heard. We have a worldwide stage, and we can be heard in reference to the deeds of this country. I contend that the majority of black people don't agree with a lot of stuff that this country has done. But if you notice, when you listen to a lot of, you know, you might hear terrestrial programs, they term this as us or we. But yeah. I think that black folks need to start changing that language. But go ahead.
But listen, I gotta go. But I would just like to say to you, Brother Richard, Brother Richard, please don't let the white man upset your nerves this week. You know what I mean? Make sure that, you know, you don't get discombobulated and you come in on Friday, relax, mellow, chill, and, you know, don't have to dash work your nerves. But I don't want you coming in to the office Friday night stressed out because of the daddy. All right, Richard?
Yeah,
have you a good cup of tea, Richard. You know what I mean? If you need to, have your little bit of wisdom, you know, do whatever you have to do to make sure the daddy don't have you like you was last Friday. Wasn't a good look, Richard.
Jay,
all right, Richard?
Thanks for your call, man.
Have a good night, buddy.
Peace. We went a little overtime tonight, but it was a good conversation. And again, I want to thank our guest this evening, Attorney Malik Sulu Shabazz, for spending some time with us, letting us know some of the things that he's involved in, things going on, and things that we can do to get involved either with him or other groups that want to make a difference on what's going on for our people here and how we can move our people forward, irrespective of the direction this country is going. Before I leave, I want to let everybody know again about African Perspectives. They'll be on tomorrow. You can catch Brother Oshi tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock on Time for Awakening, 11 to 1. That's African Perspectives on Wednesday. Sister PLC will be back with the program Revive. That'll be on at 8 o'clock on Wednesday evening, 8 to 10. on Thursday. It'll be the debut of us lifting up. Well, they had a debut last Thursday, but you'll hear a full program of us lifting us this Thursday at 8 o'clock. Time for Awakening will be on Friday evenings, 8 o'clock, I'm sorry, Eastern Standard Time. Saturday, we'll be opening things back up again with SST, with Troy Woolmore. Saturday morning, Sports Talk that comes on at 10 o'clock, 10 to 12, and then later that afternoon, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. From 4 to 6, Dr. Rogers was on. His debut came Saturday, this past Saturday, yesterday, from 4 to 6. Black Reality Think Tank. Well, he'll be on his second program. We'll be on Saturdays, this Saturday coming up, 4 to 6. And then it starts over again with Revive on next Sunday at 11 o'clock a.m. and Time for Awakening, 7 o'clock Sunday evening. New programs slated to join the lineup in November, so we'll have it on the website. Making some changes to the site, so Time for Awakening website will be kind of revamped, hopefully in a couple of weeks. The new programs will be up for podcasts, so you can download them, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. So just keep your eyes peeled for some new developments, because we'll post it on the website, and we'll post it to the Facebook page. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the thing that they'll soon have to take care of.